well, we'll get underway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You should have received a written brief of my submissions.
We have indeed, and I've read it. I'm sure my colleagues have too.
And I've just arranged to hand out to you six supplementary briefs from Mr. Miller of the applicant, the submitter company, Mr. Carr, Mr. Trevathan, Mr. Ballingall, and then there's two supplementary briefs from Mr. Devlin. One is a summary and the other is responding to your minute inviting submissions on the NPS, the latest NPS on urban development. There is a couple of typos in my, which I should correct in my written brief.
Don't know who your witnesses are, I see.
Don't know who they are?
Yes, there's a... Was it you? However, tell me what the typos are and I'll see if I spotted them.
Right.
An interesting test.
Paragraph 5, that should read in the third line, existing activities on sites surrounding the TRL land, not and surrounding sites. Similar on 17, page 4, where it should read, applies to lands surrounding the TRL land and land that will remain GIZ. And then at...
So can you repeat that? As it applies only to land...
Applies to land surrounding the TRL land and land that will remain GIZ. And at paragraph 43, right, the reference to three parks should be Anderson Heights. Paragraph 43, page 9.
Can you just repeat that again, please?
Paragraph 43, page 9.
Yeah.
The reference to three parks in the second line should be Anderson Heights. Now, the land subject of the submission is now on the screen behind you. Now, was there an issue about who was appearing? Which witnesses?
No. I did you an injustice. Somebody else referred to didn't refer to Mr. Trevathan.
Right. So I'm happy to answer any questions in relation to the submissions, and then I'll call each of those witnesses to read their summaries and answer any questions.
Yes, well, I do have one or two questions, Mr. Todd. I'm sure you'd be disappointed if I didn't. First relates to Mr. Ballingall's evidence. You'll be aware that we have a large number of submissions seeking either to soften the edges of the general industrial zone or to rezone land currently zoned general industrial. I can understand that Mr. Ballingall has looked at the subject site, but we, of course, have got all these balls in the air with now an instruction that we must ensure that there is sufficient industrial land to meet short, medium, and long-term demands. How do we use Mr. Ballingall's evidence? As I say, he's comparing what your client's seeking with the notified position, but we've got all these other people trying to shift the goalposts as well. So where does that leave us?
Well, first of all, I'm not surprised you've got a number of submissions given the notified provisions of the GIZ zone. It doesn't come as any surprise that there are a number of those. But in relation to the evidence, first of all, I don't think it is correct that you should be looking solely at Wanaka in terms of the supply of industrial land, that you should be looking wider on a district-wide basis. In terms of your obligations to ensure that you've got sufficient industrial zone land for the future. And thereafter, you have to, I assume, like any proposed district plan process or plan change process that may have a number of submissions seeking changes, you are going to need to assess in your own manner which of the land is more suitable for the zoning than other. And that will include, of course, land that is currently zoned industrial, but the council seeks to change away from industrial to another purpose. And in terms of Mr. Ballingill's evidence, the only and possibly the question the question obviously needs to be put to him, but I would suggest that it's only proper that in responding to a notification plan, he is responding to what is proposed in that plan and what his client is seeking.
I'm not saying it was improper. That's why I'm asking you and not him.
Right.
About how we use his evidence.
Yes. Well, it's part of the overall assessment that you'll have to undertake in determining the submissions to the plan to the proposed plan.
And picking up on that response, if we take a district-wide view, given that the assessment is that there's less freeboard in Queenstown in terms of industrial land supply than in Wanaka, does that take us to a place where, to meet the NPS objections, we should have more rather than less industrial land in Wanaka?
Well, first of all, we need to understand what we're talking about by way of district. And it's not necessarily by the definition which you might otherwise normally put it in your consideration of submissions. It is a geographical district, so it just doesn't include Queenstown. It also includes Cromwell and places like Arrowtown. The second issue is, in terms of the extent of the freeboard, using your term, I'm not sure if you're taking into consideration the settlement of the quite large area of industrial land which has recently been signed off by the, as I understand it, signed off by the court in below the Remarkables, and what that does to the figures, because I couldn't see any reference to that in any of the evidence that had been put forward.
That's Coneburn.
Coneburn.
So the status of that is that the appeals on it have been
resolved, and I understand a draft order, an order has been given by the court. So that really changes the goalposts, as it were, QLDC sense, because of course that wasn't the case at the time that the plan change was notified, the evidence was submitted, the reports were undertaken, or indeed when the court assessed this issue and how you should address the NPS in the Bunnings case.
Yes, I'm interested in that. You said we should take into account Cromwell.
Yes.
I'm thinking, what evidence do we have as to the availability of industrial land in Cromwell?
I've got no idea. That's not... the situation in relation to that is I'm simply confirming what the court found in the Bunnings decision, that that's what you should be doing. And that's any assessment in terms of the requirement for long-term industrial land in the district should not be confined, as I said, to a QLDC situation, but a geographical situation.
Thank you. And one of the issues that we have, that submitters are putting to us vigorously, and the reporting officer is, while not having retreated, is admitting that he's not entirely comfortable with the notified plan position, is in relation to the current GIS provisions as they relate to existing non-industrial uses within the zone. So likes of retail and commercial activities, office activities that are already in the zone, and how they should be treated within the rules. There is a substantial number of submitters seeking that those provisions be made more enabling, basically recognise them and provide for their continued operation. But one view of that would be that that makes greenfield land, such as those of your client, even more valuable for industrial development if the extent to which other industrial zone land remains not available for industrial use. What's your reaction to that?
Well, again, it's not surprising that a number of people are seeking to do that because of the notification provisions, the notified provisions which make that development within those uses or future uses of a similar nature of prohibited activity. And why that's relevant is, of course, because whilst the existing use has existing use rights, that may not necessarily be the case, either in regards to an extension of the physical form or the scale of the use, the scale intensity of the use of those existing buildings. It also calls into question whether or not the provisions provide for efficiency, given that you may very well have buildings which effectively become useless and have to be demolished. But also, I don't think you can necessarily suggest that just simply because the council has seen fit to allow those businesses to establish now, that it doesn't mean that some industrial use may not come along in the future in respect of those premises or some modified premises or former premises. The other thing that I'd say is that, again, you have to look at in terms of your consideration, the demand for industrial land and the supply of industrial land, and whether or not, because it's a greenfield site, makes it more acceptable or not. In my mind, that's questionable. I don't think you should be looking at the simple basis upon which it's a greenfield site to say that justifies a zoning. In my mind, that doesn't necessarily make any sense on a resource management basis. It overcomes a conflict which has been created by the council, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a logical proposition.
You mentioned Bunnings. The question I have is whether the latest NPSUD has overtaken the reasoning in Bunnings, at least to some extent, because this is another point that other submitters have been pressing on us for different reasons, because it now says our obligation to give effect to that NPS is to provide at minimum for the short, long-term and short, medium and long-term in effect to ensure that the capacity is available at minimum.
At minimum, yes. But I think in that, you've also got to look at, you've got to take a real-world view of the situation. Is Wanaka going to be in the future, because it certainly hasn't been in the past, a site that requires a significant allowance or supply of industrial land when clearly the evidence is, and I think it's been partly accepted by the council staff, especially in relation to three parks, that the demand is for something totally different. And that includes, in terms of the new NPS, the ability for people to be able to live in close proximity to where the businesses are. And that's exactly what is proposed in terms of my client's submission. It'd be almost as if they knew the MPS was coming when they sought the zoning that they did, because effectively, as Mr. Devlin will state in his supplementary brief concerning the MPS, it's tailor-made. So if you've got evidence that on a district-wide basis that there is an abundance of industrial zoned land, why would it be that you just allow some extra to sit there? Because, as Mr. Belling will say, that may be totally inefficient. Is it just going to sit there empty? Because that's what's happened. The evidence is there clearly for you, and Mr. Miller can confirm that there has been no demand for that land for industrial purposes since they've owned it.
Is your point that needing to make land available for people to live with close proximity to where businesses are . How does that fit with the recognition of reverse sensitivity in industrial areas, the traditional recognition of the desirability of separating, in particular residences, but generally sensitive activities from...
Well, Mr. Trevathan has addressed that in his evidence, and I just adopt his evidence. He's the expert in these matters, and he's certainly saying that such an issue can be dealt with, that nobody is expecting people to live in a perfect acoustic situation, and indeed given the types of uses that are establishing in the industrial zone, he believes that with proper new modern standards of construction that matter can be resolved. That's his evidence, so I can only rely on that.
Is it just a noise issue? Like, I understand that he's the noise expert, but is...
Well, Mr. Carr's dealt with it in terms of cycling and walking and things like that. In fact, the industrial zone, which was a surprise to me, possibly shouldn't have been, has a requirement for cycle spaces to be maintained, and yet we've got evidence from the council that raises concerns about the ability for people to cycle and walk from this site through the industrial zone when the council's own rules propose that people will cycle to the industrial area. So it's not just noise. There are other issues associated with it. But what we're talking about here is not traditional low-density residential quarter-acre sections or 800 square metre sections. We're talking about the provision for residential flats associated with business premises, exactly what exists on Gordon Road now today. Presumably, if there was evidence of conflict and reverse sensitivity, you would have that evidence before you. Well, I certainly haven't seen any of it from council's staff of complaints from residents in Gordon Road about noise associated with the industrial activities around them.
Could be because they've all got noise. There are no complaint covenants on their titles, of course.
Well, it may well be. I'm sure the ones adjacent to that again haven't. I'm talking about the ones that have got the residential flats above the apartments, above the businesses.
Thank you, Mr. Todd. As always,
nothing with the legal. I'm just wondering, with regard to the Bunnings decision and the including Cromwell, and to the commissioner's point, with regard to there's no evidence either a lack or an oversupply of land in Cromwell, should we use the precautionary principle and just accept that there may be a shortfall?
I think you're fortunate that you don't need to worry about Cromwell, because Ms Hampson and her evidence is suggesting that there's sufficient land in the Wanaka area, and from a on a district-wide basis, it was clear from the Bunnings decision that there was evidence of sufficient capacity. That's the evidence that's been that is being produced to you today, and since that evidence was done, there's been another 15 hectares of industrial land approved by the courts within the district. So the fact that the council hasn't assessed whether or not there's any industrial supply in Cromwell as part of its overall Section 32 analysis in respect of this matter.
And Cornburn's 15 hectares?
Sorry? Cornburn's 15 hectares.
Thank you. That's everything.
Just one more. Thank you. Yeah, thanks. So so the submission looks pretty comprehensive. My first question is, if we were persuaded to retain the open space area on the predation pond land as notified, and that would wipe out 10 or 12-ish hectares of industrial zone proposed in the submission, does that place the rest of the submission in jeopardy?
Whose submission?
The submission we've got.
Tussock Rise.
From Tussock Rise.
Submission, looking at the whole, there's a whole package proposed. If we didn't agree with a central chunk on the open space land, does that lead us to refuse the rest of the submission?
Well, I guess you've got to make an assessment in relation to that issue.
Well, and I'm asking you what your advice is to reform that assessment.
Well, again, as I understand it, it was Ms Hampson's evidence to you that the change in zoning of the former oxidation pond site would not result in an issue in terms of supply. She presumably was basing that on the assessment that our client's land would be included as GIZ zone. Again, I said, as I would repeat what I've already said, that in undertaking that assessment, she hasn't looked at or hasn't taken into consideration the 15 hectares at Cornburn. And I guess that you need to consider whether or not the change in that use, which was a use which was promoted by the council as something within a reasonably short time frame ago, as suitable for yard-based industrial activities, what's changed?
The business mixed use zone proposed I can understand the argument that the existing business activities scattered amongst there, many of them might become non-compliant or prohibited under the notified GIZ. That's something we've heard across the GIZ everywhere, not just here. And if the question was just about finding a better fit of employment zone to recognise those existing activities and a greater diversity maybe of employment activity, I could understand it. But the business mixed use zone also allows all of that land to become residential over time. And that to me is a very separate discussion and question about employment land versus residential land. So,
well, I don't think it allows it. It would have to go through a resource consent process.
Well, I don't think there's a lot in the way that says you shouldn't have residential. But I'm not going to have that discussion with you because I'm not asking that question. What I want to ask you is, if we came to the view that we didn't support residential activity to the extent that we think the zone might otherwise allow, but we did agree with the argument supporting a change of perspective on the employment land, so you might end up with something like an augmented semi-mixed-use zone that's actually just a different kind of business zone. Would that be satisfactory to the submitter, or is the opportunity for a lot more residential actually a key part of the submission?
Well, I think you'd have to look at your obligations under the MPS and the objectives and policies which they talk about. That's number one.
Yeah, because well, I'm actually minded by that because that talks about business land, and so providing
well, it also
opportunity for a lot of that to turn into residential might not achieve that.
Yeah, well, I won't repeat Mr. Devlin's because he's going to present it, but basically if you read the objectives and policies, from my reading of his interpretation of it, it also goes further than that. and saying that you should also be making provision for people to live in those areas as well. But that's by the by.
Something you're saying? I didn't read that when I read your supplementary statement, Mr. Nevin, that people should live inside employment zones as well.
That he said it, the MPS is saying it.
I thought you said, Well, we'll take it up with Mr. Devlin.
Yeah.
I thought you referred us to what he was going to talk to, what the MPS is free based.
Yes, that's what I was meaning.
But okay. So MPS obligations, yeah. Anything else?
Well, the second thing about would it satisfy the client? I think you need to ask the client, to be honest, to be fair.
Right.
What I'm saying is the case has been made out for that to occur.
Do you feel that we would have an appropriate, clear runway in terms of scope for that sort of halfway agree in part, or do you think we really need to be looking at...
You'd have scope.
Yeah, okay. All right. Hey, look, thanks for that.
Just... Commissioner's question has reminded me of a point I needed to ask clarification of the relief being sought. The original submission sought BMAS or a proportion of BMAS and a proportion of residential.
Yeah. Sorry, I should clarify.
Mr. Devlin said he wasn't presenting evidence on the alternative.
Yes.
Is it still being pursued?
No. Clear preferences for the business mix, you say.
Commissioner Dawson.
If you could just help me, Mr. Todd, because I'm not familiar with this. Do you have an outstanding appeal on stage one? Or
yes, we do.
On this land?
Yes,
yeah.
We do.
So is that for what sort of zone? Is that for residential?
Low density residential. Yes. What happened here is that the current submitter acquired the property with that submission already in place.
Right.
And basically... what it did was pursued that submission simply because, as was accepted by the court in its decisions relating to the application to strike out that appeal, was that because of the stage manner of the review, my client could have no guarantee at the time they were required to make submissions on stage one what the council's position might be in terms of stage three, or indeed whether there was going to be a stage three, because it was signalled, but there was no guarantees at that point in time. So my client was forced into a situation, which again the court accepted, of having to preserve its position in relation to that issue.
Through opposing the strikeout?
No. Through filing an appeal.
Then
the council sought to strike out that appeal on the basis it wasn't on the plan on the change, but
the courts overturned that. And you haven't progressed the appeal.
No, we haven't.
No.
It's on hold.
It's on hold.
Correct.
Pending this hearing here, but what you've just said now is that although the original submission on this stage was for part residential, part business, you've come to the position the preference is business mixed.
That's
use,
correct.
And that would prevail over the stage one appeal if this client was successful.
Again, you'd have to ask the clients.
Well, okay.
That's their call.
They
but
could do what you
couldn't.
And I.
Yeah.
They could. Right. Well. Okay. Thank you for clarifying that.
Thank you.
Commissioner Smith.
Yeah. Thank you. A couple of things. The position that there's no demand for industrial land. I mean, I wonder whether Willow Ridge, for instance, might have a different view on that, given their experience with Enterprise Drive and their experience with business land at along Tim Wallace Drive, which I understand both has been in very high demand.
Well, if that's the case, I would question why they are seeking for the GIZ land on their property to be rezoned business mixed use, and they why the council has appears to now be recommending that that be the case.
Well, equally, they're requesting a significant amount of additional TIS land further down towards Riverbank Road as well, which presumably is a result of demand. I mean, it's all about.
Well, all I can say, and Mr. Miller can confirm this, when if you ask him the question, what demand has there been for industrial on this site?
We'll take that up with. You touched on Gordon Road and suggested that that was an expression of mixed business use environment.
No, there is an example of that in Gordon Road, in terms of the flats above the mix.
And so, I suppose what. Are you suggesting that that's an expression of the mixed business use zone provisions or something?
Well, that's one way they could play out.
But the reality of what's on Gordon Road isn't its expression of an industrial A zone, isn't it?
Sorry?
It's an expression of an industrial A zone, isn't it?
Well, it's an expression of it is industrial land, I acknowledge that, but clearly there is other uses that have been put in there which are not industrial uses. Including the development that we're talking about.
Yeah, and you touched on prohibited status activities. So, I mean, in your experience, is that unusual to go down that route to that extent to prohibit activities?
In my experience, yes.
Yeah. I'm conscious that even on the three-park special zone, for instance, airports and factory farming, for instance, are still only non-complying activities. They're not...
Yeah. Well, it's possibly not surprising on the three parks land, given there was an airport there for a number of years. or at least an airstrip.
And would it be unusual in that respect to effectively have a prohibited activity next to an existing activity at the same time?
Well, I just think it's highly unusual, given that you've got a whole lot of resource there which has been developed. And I use the analogy of a law firm, for example, of a particular size that might be occupying part of the site, and then my law firm comes along and wants to take over that law firm and take some extra land. It would be a prohibited activity. It just seems, notwithstanding that right next door was a surveyor's office that we were going to incorporate into the law firm, all of a sudden that becomes prohibited. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Notwithstanding the objectives of the zone, is it even possible to try and turn back the clock by use of shift the use of land over time through use of a prohibited status like that?
Well, you could over time, I guess, but again, I just question why it would be a discretionary or non-complying activity. Why do you have to have the sledgehammer effect when you've got a lot of resource out there which is being used in those industrial zones, which is being used for non-industrial purposes, where clearly there is demand for that in that location.
I'd like to put something to you around the MFB planning stance, the planning standards and how they've been applied in the review of the district plan. So under the previous district plan, we had the residential zones. We had a business zone that was different to the mixed business zone. It was more, I suppose, service-oriented, vehicle business-oriented. Then we had an industrial A zone, and we had an industrial B zone, and there was sort of a continuum, I suppose, from residential at one end to hard industrial at the other. Everything had a place within that, and possibly overlapping in some cases. Under the district plan review, we still have the residential zones. We have the business mixed use zone that has possibly been shifted in that direction. It's definitely more permissive to residential activities, more permissive to visitor accommodation activities, and probably moves a little bit away from the heavier service activities. General industrial has replaced both the industrial A and the industrial B, but it's gone a long way in that direction in terms of sitting in the industrial B. Is it possible there's a gap in the middle that no longer has, that there's a whole bunch of activities that no longer have a place?
No, I don't necessarily accept that, because I think a combination of the general industrial and the business mixed use will cover most scenarios. I'm not sure what type of activity you'd be contemplating would be in the gap.
I suppose I'm considering those activities that are service-related activities, might be car servicing, might be light industrial engineering firms that don't necessarily, you know, that would have clearly fitted into the, and certainly those activities that have some component of that, but also a large amount of office space, for instance. I'm just wondering where they fit in the spectrum.
Well, I think the engineering type activity would fit within the industrial zone. That's my understanding. Yes, there would be a limited amount of office space associated with that bit as a permitted activity, and you'd have to get a consent to go with it. But I guess
in some cases it's prohibited, though, isn't it, to have more office?
Yeah, well, that's the problem. That is a problem.
So that there isn't. I mean, you know, and I use the example with the council staff. You take Calder Stewart, for instance, down at Milton or wherever it is, and you've got both a large operation of a company in terms of office space as well as...
A headquarters.
A headquarters type thing. And surely from a diversification point of view, that's the type of business that we need to attract to our community to create jobs. I mean, where does it fit?
Yeah, no, well, you're right. It doesn't.
It doesn't fit.
No.
Okay.
So you'd have to have a combination.
So,
but again, that's the problem with the sledgehammer approach, that's what you get. There's no flexibility to enable you to deal with those few companies that may wish to establish in the future their headquarters here.
I suppose what I'm asking is that a fault of the general industrial zone, or is it a fault of the structure that we've set up by leaving a gap in the middle?
I think it's a fault of the rule.
The prohibited status is
so inflexible.
So you're suggesting that the general industrial zone needs to be broadened rather than something placed in the middle?
Not necessarily broadened, but less to be made more flexible, cover the types of scenarios that you're talking about.
And so does that need to be modified to the extent of enabling what the industrial A rules enabled?
I would have thought so, because your primary activity is the engineering.
Okay. And just one last question on this, and I appreciate the discussion on this. Is if we're to take what is becoming the three parks commercial zone under the proposal, so there's an additional 19A chapter that's proposed by council staff, does that fit somewhere in the middle? Are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not.
All right. And maybe Mr. Devlin might be familiar with that. But I appreciate that discussion, and we'll continue on. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Todd. Who's your first witness?
Mr. Miller.
Thank you. My fellow director of Tussock Rise is here. Would it be appropriate for him to join us? I know that the submission is in my name, but it represents the company.
Happy for you to introduce him if you think he can contribute. Well, we're not going to stand on ceremony here.
Thank you very much.
But you should tell us who he is.
Yes, it's Grant Bissett. Grant is my fellow director.
Mr. Bissett.
Can you just read your summary, please?
My name is Paul Miller. I'm a director of Tussock Rise Limited. I have been a business owner in Wanaka since 1976 and still am. I've also been an active real estate salesperson in Wanaka for 20 years. Tussock Rise Limited was surprised by the lack of accuracy and therefore the apparent deception caused by the S32 report in relation to the supposed ground truthing in the proposed general industrial zone. it significantly underestimates the amount of reverse sensitivity issues that will be caused by the proposed GIZ between Gordon Road and Frederick Street, including Ballantyne Road and Tusk Rise. My estimate, further to the ground-truthing evidence that I have supplied, is that approximately 90 tenancies on the TRL, mostly currently Industrial A boundary, 120 households on the Bright Sky neighbouring land, approximately 110 households on Golf Course Road, and 140 households in the Aspiring Lifestyle Retirement Village, they will all have reason to complain about the less desirable, that's a quote from Tony Avery of QLDC, and dirty, quote Natalie Hampson, QLDC consultant, activities that will be allowable on the TRL land under general industrial zoning. There has been significant suggestion from QLDC staff that turning the TRL land into a BMUZ will cause reverse sensitivity for the occupants on TRL. The fact of the matter is the reverse of this. If TRL stays as Industrial B or becomes general industrial, the existing Industrial A is predominantly BMU already. Even if it had been proved that there is a need for the amount of GIZ that is proposed, which of course it hasn't, that would not be a reason to put it in the wrong place. Gordon Road to Frederick Street and west of Ballantyne Road is now the wrong place. The town has grown into this area, making it impossible to cater for the less desirable and dirty industrial activities in this neighbourhood. In a commercial sense, the need has been clearly identified for warehousing with approximately 250 square metres of retail attached, light manufacturing such as fishing rods and other sporting equipment with more than 100 square metres of retail, and independent office space for the likes of software and gaming programmers. These activities do not fit into an industrial zone and don't mix with industrial activities. Curiously, QLDC do not appear to respect the appropriate activities in respective zones. This is being shown by their proposal to make approximately 50% of the activities in the GIZ non-complying or prohibited. The further recent development of their own works yard in the LDSR zone of Tenby Street West, which would be a perfect place to alleviate the problems Wanaka has with unaffordable worker accommodation, is another indication of this. Grant Visitor and I, as the owners of Tussock Rise Limited, do not wish to leave an island of general industrial zoned land appropriate for the less desirable and dirty industrial activities as our legacy in the middle of our resort town. And just something at the end of that is that I had another read of the Section 42 report, and I note that at 5.19, Mr. Place quotes Natalie Hampson's evidence, and it says in, talking about, she estimates that the following proportion of existing activities would be categorised as prohibited or non-complying activities. And under B, it's within the Wanaka ODP Industrial B zone, seven activities, or 44% of the total, would be prohibited or non-complying activities. Well, I know for absolute sure that relates, that says that there are 16 activities in the zone. There are 38 at 12 Frederick Street on its own. It also says within the new GIZ area on Ballantyne Road, there are currently no activities that would be prohibited or non-compliant. There are three residential flats in that area. Although I accept that Ms. Hampson's evidence does say that we've got more than enough industrial land, and I agree with that, I really, really question the credibility of Ms. Hampson's evidence based on those facts. Thank you.
Answering the questions.
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Miller and Mr. Bissa. Probably a good idea that you're both there, because the first question I have for you is, what is your vision for the pair of you for the Tussock Rise land?
If I could just speak to that, right from the outset when we bought this piece of land, our vision was to achieve a sensible transition from the industrial aid that existed through to the proposed residential, which is now on the western border. Now, at the time we acquired the land, that western border was rural general. It's now low-density suburban residential, and our paradise for us is to have a sensible transition from the industrial A, currently zoned on Valentine Road, Gordon Road and Frederick Street, through to that residential land. And we propose to achieve that by having commercial business mixed use type activities down the eastern, northern, eastern and southern boundaries of our land, transitioning to residential on the west. And we believe that that is a sensible outcome for that land, as you've seen, because we heard earlier that you've actually been there, which is very pleasing to hear, because it's a well elevated piece of land. It makes no sense to excavate it 3 metres down and put the dirty, heavy industrial activities in there to us. We believe in years to come, not many years to come, it's almost going to be in the centre of town. You've got a medical centre out to the west, you've got 3 parks out to the east. It's within walking distance of the lakefront bars and restaurants and hospitality area, the golf course and so on. To us, it makes no sense to be heavy industrial.
Now, interesting you talk about the elevation, because yes, we have been there. I think you probably heard me say that we went up and stood on the edge of your land at the top, at the end of Connell Terrace, observed the elevation difference, observed what you've got on the land, which is not a lot at the moment. We had a submission this morning from residents at the on the back section of Golf Course Road who wanted to talk to us about the height limit on Tussock Rise. They were complaining about the shift from a 7 metre height in the industrial B zone. In your eyes, what's your view of that? You're saying you're transitioning to...
So we worked with the people on Gordon Road, who were the Wilsons, who you heard from this morning.
That was who I was meeting.
Yeah, the Wallaces, and also Jim Ledgerwood, who he's also a long time objector to this land being industrial. And if we can just talk about the history there for a moment, the Wallaces have been involved in opposing industrial development on this land since 1986, and they've given us a box of documents which is truly enormous, and you'll be hearing from them on Thursday, I believe. So we've worked with all of those parties, and the message that's been delivered to us very clearly is that they will live with a higher height limit on a softer zone, but if it's to remain industrial, they are adamant that they want it to stay at 7 metres. But would all of us agree that industrial is the wrong zoning for it? We are happy to work with them in terms of a height limit on a different zoning. I understand business mixed use currently allows for 12 metres. We would be happy to discuss a reduced height limit, because one of the things that we are very conscious of is because of the elevation of that land, it is actually quite visible from a lot of places in town. It's not at the moment because there's only rabbits on it, but you start putting big buildings on it and it will become very visible. So we're happy to have that discussion around a height restriction with a change in zoning.
And potentially even there was some, excuse me, some discussion about digging in, or it was, is that something we've discussed?
We're not particularly fond of the notion of digging out the land, and there's a couple of reasons for that. One is it's kind of not cool just to spend a whole lot of diesel to create a whole lot of fill that you've got to then take off the site and put somewhere else. To us, that's not a smart planning outcome. You're far better to address what you put on top of the land and get that right rather than do that. However, under the current zoning and structure plan for that area, the provision is to do exactly that in places to go down 3 metres, excavate 3 metres, so you can get the 10-metre height thing, because the profile at the moment is seven metres above existing ground level. To us, that's not digging a 3-metre hole in the middle of town and ruining a nicely elevated piece of land that's got great views is not a particularly smart planning outcome when you can actually change the use of the land that maximises that rather than disregards it totally.
And we don't see a need for 3-level buildings.
Mr. Hill, any questions for these gentlemen?
I think I've got three. Mr. Todd mentioned that there was no demand for industrial land use on this land. Is that your view, and have you done any marketing, or how do you know?
Yes to both of those things. So when we introduced the idea of a change of zone and a better use for the land to council and were turned down flat, and that they wouldn't accept our application, we decided that it would be a good idea to find out what the desire was in the community. So we had drawn a subdivision plan by Patterson Pitts, and that was for all industrial on the usable part of the site, and bearing in mind that at the moment that's only about 5.3 hectares of the 9.3 because of the open space and bund areas, etc. We put that to the market through a real estate agency, one of my colleagues at the time. We found that there was very, very little uptake for industrial.
Can I just say, is that industrial in terms of the way this zone has been notified, i.e. what the restricted...
It was under industrial B,
right,
which
okay.
was actually slightly less restrictive right. than general industrial is. The bulk of the inquiry was for, I want to move from Christchurch, I'll sell my house, I'll build myself a joinery factory, I'll put a flat above it, I'll live there until I can afford to build myself a house here, and then I'll put my staff in the flat. Things along those things. We do actually have a fishing rod manufacturer that wants to have, under industrial B, you can have 100 square metres of retail, and that's been reduced under general industrial to 50 square metres of retail attached to your industrial activity. Now, he does manufacture these rods and that sort of thing, but he wants to expand his business into more retail and a bigger area.
Oh.
So, yes, that's too restrictive. And generally, also, from my point of view as a real estate licensee, because I've been in business myself for this length of time, I've concentrated and become probably the person that's dealt with more of the commercial side of real estate in Wanaka than anyone else. And I have definitely found over the time that there is a desire for the lighter commercial activities that are not downtown souvenir shops and that sort of thing. We also have a business that wholesales and retails, so they wholesale cleaning equipment, etc., to motels, hotels, that sort of thing, pots and pans, and they want to have their own premises specifically designed, and they need about 250 square metres of retail.
So a number of submitters have asked for the GIS to be more liberal. From your perspective, is there a middle ground if in the end the recommendations were to provide more flexibility for the amount of office or the amount of something else go some way, or is it your view, just from what you've said, it's really the light commercial that you're after, and therefore a midpoint would or would not satisfy your concerns?
Well, we believe that there is a place for general industrial zoning close to what's anticipated under the advertised plan, and the lighter SOs. You know, there is a lot of talk at the moment about trying to get the pure industrial, and whether it's pure as in other places or not, I don't think Wanaka will ever need that, but we are of the view that general industrial, more or less, is pretty good, but it's just in the wrong place on this land, and that because of its proximity to other things, its elevation, all that sort of stuff, that we're better to have a better use on land.
So, final question, but it just segues nicely, where is the right location in your view?
For general industrial? Mm. South of the businesses on the south side of Frederick Street,
so we can have a look at it there.
I think that Willow Ridge and Orchard Road's property between the oxidation ponds and the road was appropriate.
Right.
I still believe that that part of the oxidation ponds that is contaminated is an appropriate place for industrial. And I think that probably in that regard, and further to an earlier submitter, there are very few people who were here when there was a tannery on the other side of Ballantyne Road that fed all its chemicals into those oxidation ponds. And everybody looks at them and says it's human waste. Well, actually it's not. And that's why the figures of millions of dollars to resurrect that land have been quoted. And if you consider the size of that land and the fact that that's industrial and yard-based at the present time, then a small amount of it to use still as industrial because it's on the lower ground. And it has good access.
Thank you.
Mr. McLeod, any more?
Just with that point about the tannery and the recondition of the site, doesn't it relate to how you use the site? So, for example, Thames Fields built on a tantalising plant, Northlakes built on a tantalising plant, and that's residential houses.
Yeah, it's about the testing of the site and what's required to bring it up to standard for use, I think, more than anything else.
And one question, you've done a lot of good work in terms of, and thank you for your evidence with regard to analysing the use of the businesses.
Okay.
I'd be interested in your opinion of the Gordon Road examples used a lot. Now, those are legally established uses, or the buildings are legally established. Is the use, currently its use, is that legally, is that a reflection of that legal establishment?
Yes. As a custodial flat, the thing is that some of those residential flats are actually rented out independent of the activity below, but they work fine like that. The resource consent was not necessarily issued that way because they were set up as custodial flats for their industrial activity below them.
And would it be fair to say that some of the activities below are not necessarily possibly what the original consent is, that there's become more of a residential component?
The activities down below are actually all allowable under the industrial industrial A rules that I can see. And further to scale and intensity and change of use, there are some of those residential flats. So each one from A to N has a residential flat above, or did have. They're still equipped as flats, but a lot of them, or some of them, sorry, are now used as offices upstairs and not residential flats. And according to the information that is in the Section 42 report, if you, and as per the Resource Management Act, if you change the use for more than 12 months, then you are not able to go back to the original use. So I think that if under the general industrial zone, so that's one of the factors that we need to consider. But I think when you talk about Gordon Road, our major concern is that our land at this point in time is 3 to 4 metres above the ground level in Gordon Road. And if we have somebody that decides that they want to have a firewood business on our industrial land, and that they put it, they buy the site off us as industrial, it's at the northwestern end of our block, and it's right beside those residential flats and offices, etc., in Gordon Road, then I think that we will have a lot of problem with reverse sensitivity. Not the way it's been judged up until now in the reports, but exactly the opposite way.
Can I just add to that, that when we did put these sites to market, and no disrespect to the lawyers present, a lawyer approached us and signed a contract to purchase, and we asked him what his intended purpose was, because we are quite mindful of the neighbours, and he was going to put a firewood business lease to someone he knew who was looking for space for a firewood business while he held the land and sought to change the zoning. So what that told us was he, like us, didn't see the current zoning as appropriate, but what we could see happening out of that was a business that was happening that was just going to irritate our neighbours, and we didn't want to go down that path. So.
And just a general question which you may or may not know the answer for, but the SHA area, right, any idea why that was withdrawn?
That was withdrawn, and I'm the chairman of the company that owns that land as well, and Paul and I are both directors of it. That the SHA was withdrawn from that land because we got today 48 of a 20-day process, and the council advised us they were now going to notify that consent, and that was going to add further cost and delay. We'd already spent over $300,000 on that consent application, and the shareholders had no appetite to continue to deal with the council that shifted the goalposts.
Which we found to be very unfortunate, because, of course, the Community Housing Trust lost their share of the land immediately, but that's the way it was.
So that land now has reverted to low density suburban residential.
We've done a basic sketch on the land, which shows that it will very easily, under those rules, accommodate 120 households, maybe more if some of the sites get subdivided in future.
Thank you.
Commissioner Munro.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, gentlemen. You'll have heard the questions I put to your council about the split that you have in your mind about residential and employment, and the reason for that is that, as I've read the business mixed use zone, it could all be turned into housing fairly permissibly under those provisions. And so, to my mind, it's a different magnitude of question, changing the balance of jobs to just making it potentially all houses. So what is your vision there in a bit more detail, please?
Well, if we could just go back to the previous owners of the land. When we bought the land off Graham pointed out, we inherited the submission that they have made that the land be entirely residential, because they are also living on Golf Course Road and don't want it to be industrial tea or general industrial. So I guess we're a little bit hamstrung by the provisions of the planning process and zoning and so on. That's why, as I say, paradise for us was to have a sensible transition from the industrial A through commercial business mixed use. And the things we had in mind were gyms, breweries, childcare, that sort of thing that would meet the needs of people that lived in the area, and then transitioning from that into low density suburban residential on the western boundary next to the land that already is. So instead of having a hard transition from one zone to another, you would bleed through. Now, business mixed use is the only zone currently that we see that would let us achieve that. We, as Graham said, we continued with the appeal on residential just to protect our position because of the staged nature of the plan review. If we let that go, we couldn't rejoin the game if we crashed and burned through this process. So that's, we've kind of been forced into that position, which isn't of our choosing, but it's just the way it is.
I appreciate that.
Could I just add to that it was questioned earlier of our council as to whether our whole submission would crash and burn if we didn't end up with a split on the oxidation ponds. And to that extent, also the land in the Umbers Street, McCormick Street, Sir Tim Wallace Drive area that is currently shown as general industrial on that map on the screen. Because we thought there are a lot of activities, including lawyers' offices that are brand new, and gyms and Ideal Electrical and all those people that don't fit in that zone, we suggested that be business mixed use as well. Now, that was because we couldn't see the other option. And further to Commissioner Smith's comment before about the commercial zoning, it's actually, I believe, to be called Three Parks Business Zone in there. And that is actually a zone that takes away the residential part of the BMU, but leaves the bulk of the rest. And that is a sensible idea.
Look, thank you. That's very constructive. Hold on. I'll lose my own train of thought. Because we may agree entirely with the submission as is, but it would be most disappointing if the issue that this fell over on was the residential, because I'm getting a sense that that's a case of you were where you were, you're in a process. And it may well be that there's a solution that gives you that western edge transition. That face value seems a pretty sensitive thing to deal with your neighbours, but maybe also keeps, just to say, an appropriately constructed framework for jobs might not be the same as the GIZ, as you see it.
One of the things that we've already offered as part of this is a 40-metre buffer off the industrial A without residence, without any residential. If it goes further than that, let's talk about it. But it's about having sensible outcomes and not necessarily being tied down by rigid planning schemes. Or, as you say, you don't want to say business mixed use with the idea that we're going to provide land for 300 jobs and find that all they're doing is sitting in their living rooms. That's not our plan.
Thank you both. That was my question. I really appreciate it.
If I could just say, you know, like the prescriptive planning requirements, we don't mind something prescriptive to that site that comes out with the right outcome, but what we can't seem to live with is something that's prescriptive for the district that doesn't fit that site. I'm not sure if I've worded that.
Oh, that's pretty eloquent. Understood.
Commissioner Dawson.
Well, I'm just going to continue on the same vein, because it is sort of exercising our minds that the business mixed use zone seems such a big jump from industrial A. And I can understand your concern about, say, the equivalent of industrial A back to GIS is also a big jump, but the business mix zone has such a high emphasis on residential and visitor accommodation and, you know, high levels of, well, in fact, high density residential and the amenity that goes with that in terms of the streetscape and the design of buildings is all quite residentially oriented, albeit that it provides for a certain range of commercial service and office-type activities as part of it, but it doesn't provide for industrial at all, not even light industrial. So you know, I am interested in where you see your emphasis, if it's at that, if you're just going to business mixed use because it's there and it's available, and you see it over, or as it has been developed over in Anderson Heights, which is not necessarily what the plan, what the zone allows, versus just an easier version of industrial A, or maybe with some residential.
And we agree with that, in that our original application plan that we drew, that was rejected totally by council, was that the outside of the site against the industrial A was what used to be business zone, not business mixed use, business.
When was that?
Sorry?
When was?
Well, that well, this was
ODP.
ODP's old ODP business.
Yes.
Yep. And
which was Anderson Heights was.
Yep,
so
exactly.
Yeah.
Yep, that's right.
Okay.
And the only departure from that really was that we thought that at that time, and we still believe that the need is there, maybe not quite as severe under the COVID-19 world, for a worker accommodation village, which was further out towards the Bright Skyland on the western boundary. So as Grant said, we could transition across the site. It wasn't planned that by going for business mixed use zone that we would end up with a heap of residential activities. That's not our plan. So if we can have a business zone that allows for it, as per business ODP Anderson Heights,
or possibly
would work absolutely fine. But if there are restrictions in terms of the percentage of residential that goes with our site, or whatever it takes to make it work, we're happy with that. It's just that we've got nothing between in general industrial and business mixed use, and general industrial does not suit our site and doesn't suit the town.
And you've noticed that there's this three-part business,
yes,
coming through now, which is sort of a bit of a mixture, well, again. Maybe not necessarily exactly what you were after, but
well,
it's trying to find that middle road.
That's right. And there's obviously negotiations that go on behind the scene, depending on you know, who's talking to who, that we're not aware of. Mm. So maybe that could have been us too. We don't know.
I think just on that, you know, I like Paul and disappointed at the inaccuracy of some of the evidence that's been put forward by the council staff around, you know, what currently exists in terms of businesses on our boundaries and all the non-compliant prohibited and whatever. To me, it's not very sensible to have zonings that you then have activities happening within that don't comply with the zoning. To me, that's a bad planning act. So our minds are not closed to you guys saying to us, well, we agree that this shouldn't be general industrial, but we don't see a current zoning that it fits either. So we want to have a discussion about an appropriate zone that's special to this land with, as Paul says, restrictions on the percentages of residential or whatever. We're very happy to have those conversations. We're focused on the outcome and getting the right outcome, not only for ourselves, but for our neighbours and the community as a whole. And we're happy to go through whatever process it is to get to that outcome. But we find that the process that we're in, if we didn't go do the things we're doing, we wouldn't get the right outcome. So we're a bit constrained by the current zonings that we can pick from, because the council told us they wouldn't accept an application for a zone change on this land. So that put us in a position where we had to choose from the ones available to us and so on. And we're not saying that that's necessarily the right answer. It's not us that made the rules, we're just trying to play the game.
Thank you.
You will have heard my discussion about the spectrum of activities. Did that ring true to you, that there's a bit of a gap in the middle, or and that you somehow fit in that gap?
Well, we've just been told that, actually. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
You also made the comment that you're open to a discussion about height.
Mm-hmm.
And I suggest now is probably the time to have that discussion. And, you know, what do you... You sort of seem to accept that as elevated ground, that a high height limit wasn't necessarily a good idea. So what is a number? Give us something to work with as to what, you know, is it 7 metres, is it 8 metres?
It's 7 metres from existing ground level, and that's what we offered to the Wilsons and the Wallaces from DDOT with this, under what would have been a special zone or a, you know, plan change or whatever.
The exception to that would be, you know, like, I was really interested to hear the telco guys talking this morning and saying it's actually much more efficient and better to have one multi-user tower that'll provide better coverage more efficiently than a bunch of them scattered around the community. So if it made sense to put one of those on that land at the higher end, at the sort of southern end, I think that would be a sensible outcome, because to me that would benefit everybody. But in terms of buildings as such, I agree with Paul.
You're happy with a 7 metre limit, regardless of what the zone is, but obviously you want something with it.
Well, what we've got to do, be mindful of, is that under general industrial zone, it is designed for the least desirable dirty activities. And there are certain things that require a higher roofline.
Yeah, understand that.
And so in that case, somebody would have to dig down, which if it's one site among a whole lot, then that becomes a real problem. And that's why one of the other reasons we don't want to go down that track.
Right. And so you talked a few times about this transition from one thing to another, but it's sort of, which seems to be strange to me, because you're transitioning to a bund, you know, an established bund, which is designed to be a hard separation between residential activities and non-residential activities. Are you suggesting that if there was a soft transition, you wouldn't require that bund, or are you saying
absolutely.
That... And with the bund, is it proposed not to have the bund? Is the no-build area proposed to go?
Under GIZ as well.
Well, actually, there's two different, we'd have to take advice here.
The operative industrial B zone has a requirement for a bund. It's even got a cross section of it in there.
Yeah.
That's gone, I believe, from the PDP. So it's been replaced with a building restriction area. So that treatment
the bund
of
is
that.
No longer there, but the buffer is.
Yeah, the treatment of that building restriction area, I think the proposed district plan's sort of silent on. And just to note that the bund that has been constructed on the site is just a little bit down at the Gordon Road end. I think that was just some excess material that was sort of parked there. It hasn't been formed right along the site.
It came from another site before we owned the land. If we can get the transition across. across there, we'd be only too happy to use the diesel to get rid of it.
But if we were minded that it does play a role in having containing, separating business, commercial, industrial activities from residential, is it still, I suppose, on the table as such? Is it something that you would use to separate those activities and to provide a hard edge rather than a transition?
We're prepared to talk about all options.
Having said that, we see it as a more sensible option rather than building artificial hills in the town to give a soft transition through.
I suppose what I'm thinking is I don't think the soft transitions are something that has been particularly effective in the past. I think the policies seem to support a separation of of the activities, particularly the industrial ones, and the reverse sensitivity. So it's just about how do we manage those best. But we appreciate the discussion we've had today on, I suppose, something else. Is that some other zone that might be suitable here? And I think encourage you and your advisors to look at the Three Parks Business Zone, which is the 19A or B, whatever it's called, and see whether that fits and where we might have some thoughts on that as it is. I think what we're hearing quite loudly that the business mixed use zone has some challenges for this site, and I think we were looking to see what options exist to remove those challenges.
Mm-hmm.
The residential component is a significant one of them.
Yep, well, we're all on for that. And you were saying that you soft approaches of change of zones don't seem to work. I don't know of any round Wanaka. Can you point me to something where it's been tried?
Well, I think that's a good reason why they haven't been adopted generally and haven't been, generally it's the hard line between one thing and the next.
I wonder, Commissioner, if it's time to move on to the next witness.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
We're good. Thank
you very much. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you.
My summary statement in front of you, circulated before Bob spoke. So again, there are two parts to it. The first part is the summary of the primary evidence, and the second part is a discussion of the officer's reports. I'm not sure how you're going for time, sir. So I'm quite happy to skip over the summary of my primary.
Perhaps you should. I think I anticipate there might be a lengthy discussion with Mr. Devon.
So paragraphs 3 through 11 are the summary of my primary evidence that I'm sure you've read, so I won't read those. But I'll start reading, if I can, at paragraph 12, which is the response to Mr. Smith's rebuttal. Having read that, it seems to me that Mr. Smith hasn't queried any matters around the efficiency of the roading network. And since he hasn't, I anticipate that he agrees that the roads and intersections have sufficient capacity to accommodate the traffic generation of the requested rezoning. But his concerns appear to relate to the potential increase in walking and cycling on the roads around the site, which currently serve the industrial activity. So as a matter of principle, Mr. Smith and I are on the same page on this one, that it's important to provide a safe environment for all types of road user. But within a request to rezone land and without a specific development, I don't consider it's practical or desirable to identify particular measures that are needed for each road user. Rather, those measures can only be devised once the type and the scale of activity are determined, and that in turn requires a resource consent to be lodged, such as when the land is subdivided. In my view, the appropriate approach is to identify whether there's any constraints that would prevent the provision of suitable measures to support walking and cycling, and I assess that within my primary evidence and consider that the legal width of the surrounding roads, which is 20 metres, is ample to provide infrastructure for pedestrians and cyclists. So that sort of width could, for example, accommodate an off-road route as well as on-road cycle lanes and widened footpaths. I'm aware that the transport chapter of the proposed district plan, the council there requires that cycle parking is provided at industrial sites. That's one cycle parking space per 500 square metres GFA. And so it's reasonable in my view that that provision is made because the council is seeking to accommodate and potentially encourage cycling movements to and from industrial activities. So with that in mind, even if the submitter's site was to remain zoned as general industrial, an increase in cycling activity on the roads around the site can be expected, and that would need to be accommodated safely. In other words, the matter of safely accommodating cycling movements on the roads around the site will arise regardless of whether the site is zoned as GIS or BMUS. It is not an outcome of the specific zoning that is sought that it doesn't arise under the council's preferred zoning. So overall, I consider that the roads adjacent to the site will need to be reassessed for the safe movements of pedestrians and cyclists under both of those zonings, and in either case, the legal road widths do not preclude the ability to appropriately accommodate walking and cycling movements. And so with that in mind, I remain of the view there are no traffic transportation reasons why the submission could not be approved and the submission site rezoned as BMUZ. And happy to answer any questions.
Just a question that occurred to me. I know this is in effect an NPS veto of car parks, car park provisions and plans.
Yeah.
Does it also apply to cycle parks?
It doesn't, as far as I'm aware.
Commissioner Hill, I'd like to kick off.
Nothing further on the transport stuff. Answered the question I had in terms of the rebuttal. Okay.
Thank you.
Crack off. The connection from Gordon Road to Avalon Station Road.
Yeah.
Avalon Station Drive.
Yes.
How do you view that as a its use moving forward?
I think it depends on the design. I mean, the presence of that road is within a number of council strategic documents, so it's not an outcome of the rezoning per se. So it's a question of the rezoning kind of fitting around that roading link. But my understanding was that it was designed to provide an alternative to the other east-west linkages. Now, I think if you could design that in a way that wholly accommodated lighter vehicles and dissuaded heavy vehicles from running through it. Equally, if you wish to devise that in a way which supported heavy vehicle movements and took them off, say, golf course road or riverbank road, then it would be possible to do that as well. So it comes down to how the road is designed in the first place and what the intention is for that road. Now, I worked on the Bright Sky SHA as well, and the queries that we received in respect of that road, to my mind, indicated that the council wasn't quite clear in its own thinking what the purpose of that road was to be, in that we had some questions about how we would manage heavy vehicle movements along with residential movements, but at other times the questions were along the lines of seeking to dissuade heavy vehicle movements. So I think the jury is still out on what that ultimate function would be, but the answer is that you can design it to encourage or discourage the types of traffic that you'd see at a higher level strategic view.
And this is possibly a step away from the use of and the impacts of this particular site. But the way the site is developed may end up with traffic coming at it from both ways, if you understand my meaning.
Yeah.
So it still has an impact on that. And that, I'm just trying to get clear in my mind, because that road will probably end up, or when that road becomes a through road, will end up with a greater function than potentially is. And
yes.
You're reasonably confident that that can be accommodated within the parameters that you've that's laid out at the moment, depending on that ongoing design.
Yes, and that exercise would have to be done anyway, because if you look at the entirety of Avalon Station Drive, you've got residential development and a retirement village at the western end. You've got land that's zoned low-density suburban residential. Then you've got land which is proposed to be zoned as general industrial, and then you've got it connecting into Gordon Road, which has got a mixture of activities, but that cross-section of Gordon Road doesn't meet the council's standard. So I think the council would have to look at upgrading that section of Gordon Road to provide a constant route all the way through, rather than have a sudden and potentially jarring change when you get to the end of the forward part of Gordon Road. So the council will have to grapple with that issue anyway, because the nature of the land zoning presently proposed is such that it transitions from residential to industrial anyway.
And that's irrespective of GIZ, BMU, low density residential, irrespective.
Yeah, so BMUZ would probably be more gentle in those terms. You'd have less really heavy trucks, so you have a different design solution. But in this instance, we do have the ability to design the road according to what that land zoning would be, because that final section of Avalon Station Drive isn't yet there.
That's everything, sir.
Commissioner Monroe.
No, thanks.
Mr. Dawson.
When you're assessing the impact on traffic of the two different zones that are being considered here,
yeah.
I mean, you've seemed to have compared against low density residential zone, but if you just put that to one side and look at the difference between BMUZ and GIZ, what are the fundamental differences between those two zones in terms of the traffic, pedestrian, cyclists, heavy traffic, whatever that's generated, and how they need to be accommodated?
The first thing to say is that within a general industrial zone, it would be possible to come up with some generic traffic generation figure. But within a business mixed use, where the activities are relatively wide, it would be extremely difficult to come up with a generic figure. And that was the reason why I didn't try to do that within the assessment, because whatever was put forward as a potential development scenario could always be open to challenge. So that's why I tried to take an extreme view of saying, well, if it was all a relatively high traffic generator, what would the effects be?
And have you used the low density residential as a proxy for that?
Plus 50% of those having residential flats as well. So trying to have one end of the scale of the development generating everything that goes out in the morning and loading onto the network, it would be possible to say, well, we've got a mix of employment and residential, and therefore we reduce the external traffic generation. And there are tricks and things that traffic and engineers can do to get a mix of activities that minimise the effects on the external network. What I've tried to do here is take an extreme view to load up those external networks to the greatest extent that I can, and then see what the effects are, rather than trying to come up with a possible scenario which would serve to diminish the external traffic generation.
And is it your conclusion that whether it's sort of at the industrial end of GIZ or at the high density residential end of BMUZ, that Gordon Road can accommodate them without undue, well, maybe with some amendments, but within its 20 metre width, the cycling, the heavy vehicles, the mix of cycling, pedestrian, light and heavy vehicles can be accommodated?
Yes.
And the time to sort out what needs to be done to Gordon Road is at the time of subdivision. Is that what you're saying?
That's what
then
I'm saying.
We have a better idea of what's going to happen.
The key thing is the road corridor wide enough that doesn't prevent any improvements from being carried out, and I would contend that yes, it's sufficiently wide, so you don't need to be looking at third-party land. And with that in mind, once you have a specific development proposal coming forward, then you can have a look at Gordon Road to make sure that what is proposed there, or what is in existence there, is going to be suitable for the changed use that would arise either with the council's preferred zoning or the business mixed use.
And even if it was lots of school children cycling and walking along Gordon Road and crossing over Valentine Road to school or coming to a bus stop, or cyclists, in other words, all this residential coming out through an industrial zone, say, a road that's got industrial each side of it, or light industrial service, then you're saying that the road can be mitigated through works on that road if necessary.
Yeah, I'm certainly not advocating for a large residential development and Gordon Road in its present form, because Gordon Road is set up in a way which is not designed to accommodate that.
Lots of crossings and things.
Exactly. Yeah. But the width of it is sufficient that you could then put in measures to support walking and cycling and accommodate that development.
Through
that existing environment, but updating the road to accommodate it.
Mm. Yeah. All right, thank you very much.
Commissioner Smith.
Yeah, thank you. Just one question, really. At the moment, we have what is the proposed general industrial zone, and it's a series of cul-de-sacs, effectively. We have Gordon Road that currently goes nowhere. We have Frederick Street and O'Connell Terrace that sort of go into dead ends.
Yeah.
In general respects, industrial, would it be desirable to have through route as opposed to cul-de-sacs for turning around of trucks and things?
Yeah, if you have cul-de-sacs, then the cul-de-sac design has to allow for a B train or a large semi-trailer that's got slightly lost to be able to then do a U-turn. Which then means that you're looking at a sort of a 25, 30 metre diameter turning head, and that then takes out a huge amount of developable land just for accommodating that. Whereas if you have a through route, then you don't need to have that element of design in it.
And so the formation in Enterprise Drive, for instance, seems to be quite significantly greater to allow for trucks in terms of formation and stuff.
As a general rule, under the council's provisions, if you had a residential road, you're looking at 5.5 to 5.7 metre wide carriageway, and in industrial zones, you're looking at an 8.4 metre wide carriageway. So there is that additional width that's provided with there, but the legal width of the road is generally still the 20 metres. There are some exceptions to go up to 24 metres, but basically stuff fits within 20 metres. Most state highways are in a 20 metre corridor.
So hypothetically, the formation of the road through Tussock Rise, if it was industrial land, would require to be greater than what Gordon Road and Frederick Street would be currently?
The formation of the road?
Yeah.
Gordon Road is 13 metres wide, curb to curb.
I see.
Yeah. Because it's got the car parking on either side of it as well. So you wouldn't go wider than the current formation of Gordon Road, and arguably you could reduce the formed width of Gordon Road if you chose to do that.
If you didn't have parking on the sides?
If you had an 8.4 metre wide road with 2.1 metre parking lanes that are permitted under the code of practice, I can't do the sums on the fly, but that's essentially going to be slightly less than 13, isn't it? Yeah.
That's all from me. Thank
you. Can you read your summary, please?
So, like Mr. Carr, the first couple of paragraphs
are a brief summary, and then from section two, I have some comments on Dr. Child's rebuttal evidence. So I'm happy to start at 2.1. In his 3.4 and 3.5, Dr. Childs observes that my comment that there will be no additional restrictions for neighbours currently zoned that should be industrial A only applies to permitted activities, and that if a neighbour applied for resource consent, that application is likely to face different challenges depending on whether the Tussock Rise site is zoned BMU or general industrial. I agree that different zonings are likely to result and different future land use outcomes on and around the site. In relation to Dr. Child's 3.6 and 3.7, I agree that a very high level of sound insulation is a relative term, and so I was referring there to the BMU sound insulation requirement of 40 dB RW plus CTR. I was using it in the context of typical New Zealand dwelling constructions, typically provide 25 to 26 dB RW plus CTR. The actual noise levels expected in this case, so the business mixed use nighttime limit is 50. So if you subtract your 40 sound insulation from that, you have a level of 10 decibels inside. And controls in other New Zealand districts, which are typically 30 to 35 RW plus CTR. Dr. Charles mentioned sound still being audible inside buildings. I've lived in a variety of areas and in all cases still heard noise from vehicles, equipment and people inside my house. I'm not aware of any situation where district plan noise controls seek to achieve inaudibility. In 3.8, Dr. Charles states that the business mixed use sound insulation control is a compromise for a mixed use zone and cannot be described as more than adequate. I consider that from an acoustics perspective, the compromise is the business mixed unit zone itself, as it permits noise sensitive activities along with moderate noise generating activities. So I guess what I'm saying there is if it was all up to acoustic engineers, we would have noise sensitive activities far removed from all noise sources, transportation, everything.
And life would be a lot simpler.
For us anyway. If from a planning perspective it has been determined that such a design is desirable, then the business mixed use sound insulation rule is more than adequate to control internal noise levels. The amenity for noise sensitive activities in a business mixed use zone will always be compromised compared to a dedicated residential area or an area far removed from external noise sources, with compromises including limitations around the use of windows for cooling and ventilation, the need to use mechanical ventilation systems, and reduced amenity in outdoor areas. All of these issues are common to any BMU area and are not specific to Tussock Rise. 3.8, Dr. Charles implies that people in a BMU zone on the Tussock Rise site might be exposed to elevated noise from neighbouring GIS. In paragraph 4.7 of my evidence, I examined what specific activities border the site and would have existing use rights and the actual noise levels they are likely to produce. Dr. Charles did not record any disagreement with that assessment. In 3.9, Dr. Giles suggests that internal levels of 30 decibels may still be intrusive depending on the character of the noise. The guidance of NZS 207, the World Health Organization, NZS 6802, does not generally support the idea that the types of intermittent sounds Dr. Giles is concerned about will have a significant effect if experienced within bedrooms at 30 decibels. I accept that any audible noise could cause disturbance in the right set of circumstances. However, again, that is not something unique to the business mixed-use or dwellings in mixed-use areas. With reference to Dr. Child's 310, my point was that regardless of the presence or otherwise of an area of business mixed-use zoning, it is not correct to think of general industrial in this area as unlimited with regard to noise and consistently suitable for heavy industrial activities. The one undeveloped industrial B site, which borders Tussock Rise, is only 45 metres from a zone which has a nighttime noise limit of 40 dB IEQ. In 3.11 and 3.14, Dr. Charles discusses industrial sites as if industrial is synonymous with high noise producing. My experience is that businesses located in industrial zones commonly include aspects which are not noise producing and instead may be adversely affected by noise, such as computer-based design work, visual quality assurance or similar inspections, precision engineering, machining and the like. I understand that businesses currently operating in the neighbouring industrial A and B zones include a scientific equipment dealer, an electrician, a seamstress, a recreational equipment importer, a printer, an upholsterer's, and an automotive parts warehouse. It is correct that acoustic engineers are most commonly involved with projects where new noise-producing activities are involved, but that is not a representative sample, as benign activities do not require input from an acoustic engineer. In 312, Dr. Charles again discusses how the presence of a BMU zone may constrain the future ambitions of industrial activities in the wider area. And again, I agree that changes to activities or new activities will need to be assessed in the context of whatever rules exist at the time, and that different zonings will encourage different outcomes. And then finally, in relation to Dr. Charles 313 and 14, I accept the point that my statement regarding no meaningful additional restriction could have been further qualified. So that statement was in relation to zones, sites bordering Tussock Rise, which in many cases have a noise limit on one boundary, which if they were zoned business mixed use would now have noise limits on all boundaries. So I had in mind activities which were either high noise producing and would not consider establishing on marginal sites, or the type of activities I've described in 2.7 above, for which noise limit restrictions are relatively immaterial. In the situation Dr. Charles describes, where a new prospective activity already needed to be carefully designed with input from an acoustic engineer to be able to comply with noise limits at a sensitive boundary, I agree that any additional restrictions may render that marginal activity now completely unviable on that site, and that may not be a bad outcome. I agree that sites fully embedded within general industrial with no noise limits on any boundary are likely to provide the most favourable conditions for high noise producing activities. Happy to answer questions.
Thanks very much, Mr. Trevathan. Mr. Hill.
Probably a more general question. And acoustics and noise are something where I clearly need to rely on expert evidence, and we've got competing expert evidence. And when I read Dr. Charles' rebuttal evidence, I thought you must have it completely wrong, because he disagreed with most of what you said. What you've pointed out now, in kind of explaining it, is it that your view that Dr. Charles has taken a very strict or extreme view, or not a real world view, which is what you seem to be suggesting, that in these areas that there will be some noise, people are subject to it, but they understand it if they live in these areas, is it?
Yeah, I think that's fair, and yeah, it was interesting reading Dr. Charles' evidence, because he would quote a couple of sections of my evidence, state that he disagreed for the following reasons, and then provide some commentary, and my reading of it was his commentary. I didn't necessarily disagree with the point he was making. So I think in terms of what he expressed about his experience with, you know, working with industrial activities, with noise sensitive neighbours, etc., I have no problem accepting. And the general concept that, as I said, noise sensitive activities, an ideal world from an acoustic engineer's point of view, would be far removed from noise generating. I suppose the context I was providing my evidence in was that this was a situation where those activities would be in proximity, and so what was an appropriate and quite normal response, I suppose.
Again, a broader question. Given, sort of more recently, much greater density of living, mixed use, are there up-to-date studies which suggest that people's views, or many that people accept that they're living in more noisy or less quiet areas, and that's acceptable to them?
Yes. So one of those standards which I mentioned, for example, the NZS 2107 in my 2.5, having reviewed those type of studies, recommends different appropriate internal noise levels for dwellings depending on the external environment. And that's because people's expectations are different.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner
McLeod. The only question, and again, it's a very general question, I do rely on your evidence because it's you're the expert in this area, but one of the considerable concerns we've heard from the neighbours was that they were more concerned about noise impacts than built form.
Yes.
What comfort can they have? Because they'll read NZS 2107, 2106 and go,
But in general terms, what comfort can they take from your evidence?
Yes. So if we're talking about neighbours, you know, outside the purple area we see on our screen, the curious aspect of it all, and it also comes to the discussion of a bund or, you know, how you would transition between noise generating and noise sensitive, is that the way around the proposed district plan rules work is that the noise limits which apply are those for the zone where the noise is being received. So for neighbours who have a residential zoning or a rural zoning, theoretically the zoning of the Tussock Rise site is immaterial. So whether it's heavy industrial or business mixed use, either way, the limit at the perimeter where you encounter residential is 50 daytime, 40 nighttime.
Which is equivalent to a car going past or that sort of region.
Yeah, so the 50-40 is, most commonly you'll see in residential areas, limits of 50 or 55 during the daytime and 40 or 45 during the nighttime. So 50-40 is, you know, the lower of those two common options. And subjectively, yeah, I suppose the kind of level of, what if you can hear the fan from the data projector, and that'll be in the 30s somewhere. And so 45 is the level where if you have your windows open, you'll still be able to sleep at night time. So 40 is a conservative limit.
So irrespective of whether it's a log splitting or a childcare facility, it'll just be, it's that number at the limit.
Yes, and the more interesting issue is how those noise producing, so it creates this interesting dynamic that, yeah, I've seen before in other industrial areas in the South Island where you have permissive limits for industrial because you're not trying to hinder the development of industrial, but that doesn't mean there is no limit, so eventually you'll encounter, you know, this zone boundary where there is a limit. And so that may mean that constrains, you know, what you would think of as heavy industrial, something like firewood processing, if that was being talked about in the northwestern corner of the site. I don't think it could practically comply with those limits, so that couldn't be established there.
That's fine. Thank you.
Mr. Monroe.
No, thank you.
Mr. Dawson.
So following on from that comment, so the submissions or the comments that are made to us, well, this shouldn't be an industrial zone because of the noise effects on the neighbouring residential areas, actually doesn't stack up, because the noise that would be is supposed to be achieved in those neighbouring zones is the same no matter what the zoning is on this site.
Yes, yeah, so that issue's built into the structure of the rules.
Yes. Though there was some comment about the residential activities that have got into the business zones for one way or another, they wouldn't have the same level of protection as the neighbouring residential zones.
No, and so that's where general industrial, there would just be no limits
at
those sites.
That's right. So there's more potential for sensitivity effects, for example, from people living within those zones.
Yeah.
But then you've said, even if you've got people living throughout the business mixed use zone, it doesn't really matter because the provisions are there to protect those people anyway.
Yeah, so the distinction, I guess, between the existing residential units in Industrial A are that there's no requirement currently, or there was, for sound insulation when those units were established. And under general industrial zoning, there would be no limit on how much noise their neighbour could make, whereas under business mixed use, if it's all new activity, then noise generating activities have a limit of 60 daytime, 50 nighttime, which is slightly more lenient than a normal residential limit. But the new noise sensitive activities are required to incorporate the 40 decibels sound insulation.
Thank you.
Commissioner Smith?
No questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cravath.
Thank you, Mr. Ballingall. Good afternoon. I think you've got my two-page summary there. I thought I'd start at paragraph 7, rather than reiterating my key points from my earlier evidence.
Please do.
Okay. According to the BDCA 20, there is no shortage of industrial zone land in Wanaka out to 2048. Demand is expected to be 12.3 hectares. Industrial land capacity is 27.1 hectares, leaving a 14.8 hectare surplus of redundant industrial zone land based on existing zoning. Rezoning 5.3 hectares at Tussock Rise from general industrial zone to business mix zone, or a blend of business mix use and low density suburban residential, would still leave a surplus of 9.5 hectares. If Tussock Rise were to be rezoned, industrial land demand could be 75% higher than projected in the BDCA 20 to 2048 and still not exhaust the available industrial land supply. That is an ample buffer to deal with any industrial land demand uncertainties, in my opinion. This was not challenged by Ms. Hampson in her rebuttal evidence, although she does note at paragraph 3.5 that the scale of any surplus will not be known until all GIS zoning decisions under Stage 3 are made. As an additional backstop in case of unexpectedly strong industrial land demand, the panel has before its submission seeking to identify new industrial land further out from Wanaka Town Centre. For example, I understand the Universal Developments Limited submission seeks to create an industrial area adjoining Hawea Township of 7.2 hectares net. The Wanaka economy has limited resources, land, labour and capital. To support economic growth, jobs and well-being, these resources need to be used efficiently. For example, as a society, we rightly support getting unemployed workers back into jobs. We seek to avoid a situation where many unemployed people have skills that no one demands. Such a scenario depresses these workers' well-being and reduces the incomes and opportunities the economy can produce. Retraining schemes seek to help displaced workers develop skills in sectors or occupations where there is strong demand. This helps the labour market adjust, improving efficiency and well-being. The same thinking can apply to land. Land is not being used efficiently if it sits idle due to being zoned for a type of economic activity for which there is evidentially little demand. This also reduces the productive capacity of the economy. It could be put to better use. Ms. Hampson refers to Tussock Rise's strategic value for industrial activity in her rebuttal evidence paragraph 3.12. I'm not sure what this means. In my view, it's an odd strategy that relies on retaining restrictive zoning in the hope that a certain type of economic activity will eventuate, despite there being no evidence to suggest it will. Ms. Hampson disagrees in her paragraph 3.32 with my view that markets are, quote, generally much better at determining an efficient allocation of resources than planners. She would be in a minority of economists with such a contrary view. My view is not born of some rabid free market ideology. The RMA requires decision makers to have particular regard to the efficient use and development of natural and physical resources. Clearly, markets are not perfect, but they do tend to be much more efficient than alternative ways of allocating resources. It is possible to believe both of these things at the same time, as I do. Ms. Hampson correctly notes in her rebuttal paragraphs 325 to 338 that where negative externalities exist, the market will not deliver socially optimal outcomes, and regulatory interventions such as zoning may be necessary. But Ms. Hampson does not explore in any detail the negative externalities in relation to the Tussock Rise site that might support her view that its use should not be left to the market. The only positive externality mentioned is the Wanaka community benefits from having industrial and services activities and employment and in accessible locations within the urban area, paragraph 3.27 of her rebuttal. But you could replace industrial and service with commercial and retail, or BMUZ enabled, and the sentence would still be true. Any such externality is not specific to industrial activity. Further, I would suggest there are more negative externalities associated with industrial activities than those enabled under a BMUZ, such as noise, pollution, heavy vehicles, etc. It's not clear to me why council would want to locate industrial activities near city centres if there are alternatives further out from the township. Ms. Hampson argues against flexible zoning on the basis that industrial land values might rise, squeezing out some traditional industrial activities in favour of higher value retail or commercial operations. Rising industrial land values are not a market failure, as stated repeatedly in Ms. Hampson's evidence in chief. That is the market working exactly as it is supposed to, signalling to businesses and council decision makers that alternative activities could deliver better returns to the community, more jobs, higher incomes, improved well-being on the land. This would seem to me to be a positive outcome for Wanaka. I take Ms. Hampson's point at 3.14 in her rebuttal that a district plan can only do so much to manage short-term cyclical downturns. However, I would argue that as Wanaka faces the most severe recession in a century, the effects of which will last much longer than 1 to 2 years, in my opinion, the more council can do through flexible zoning practices to support businesses wanting to start up or expand, the better. Happy to take questions.
Thank you, Mr. Ballinger. Mr. Hill.
A couple of questions contextually. 24 of your statement, rising industrial land values are not market failure.
Mm.
And why, I mean, I accept that and I understand it. But one of the whole issues with the, certainly that the minister, the housing minister, housing and urban development, Mr. Twyford, and the National Policy Cabinet on Urban Development, has been clear about that affordability is a key issue, and that rising land prices and land banking and all those sorts of things have contributed to poor outcomes. But how does that relate? You know, so it's not market failure, but it's something that the government's clearly trying to overcome with the competitive market and therefore stopping land becoming unaffordable. I mean, how does that sit in the context of what you've just said?
So, yeah, look, to the extent that land banking might be pushing up house prices, that's, I guess, a different set of planning and zoning discussions. So I think my point is a broader one, which is that if you don't have price signals, then it's very hard to allocate resources. And I think in the housing market, what we've seen is very strong demand, relatively limited supply, particularly in certain areas, and that is naturally pushing up prices.
I suppose that's where I was going, probably less eloquently than you've answered, in the sense that, as I understand, you know, often residential zoning has always got a much higher return than industrial zone. Is that your general view?
I haven't looked at those specific numbers.
There's always seemed to be the sort of economists that have appeared in front of me before that residential is always the highest and best. Industrial often sits right at the bottom. And hence, when I was reading through Ms. Hampson's view and the way that she's categorised this, I mean, she talks about, you know, that socially efficient outcome, but I think what she's referring to is this broader, how the whole planning context sits together and how the GIZ and this piece of land fits within that. You disagree with her? I mean, why are you saying that she is wrong, that it's not a socially efficient outcome to retain this land as GIZ?
I don't think I disagree with that. I think what I'm trying to say is it's not a socially economic or it's not a socially optimal outcome to have a piece of land sitting there for which there's no demand. And there is no evidence that there's going to be a surge of industrial land demand. So to my mind, that land could be put to a better use. That's a more efficient use of land and that better supports well-being of the community.
And do you see that? Is that a long-term view? Because once land is used for something, it really gets converted back, doesn't it?
It's certainly expensive to do so, yeah.
So your view in this case for this piece of land, I think this is the evidence that we have from the applicant, that there is little or no demand for general industrial zone. There is probably demand for something more to the commercial end.
Mm.
So your view, in a market sense, that's more efficient. Where Ms. Hampstead's, I think, saying something quite different. She's saying in a broader strategic view, overlaying a planning framework around the planners, that using that piece of land is a better planning outcome.
Yeah, I'm not qualified to talk about planning.
No, that's the point. So I bet, but from an economics perspective, I suppose what I'm really asking, what is the intersection then do you see between economics, market, market determination, highest and best use of the best use of land, and a planning framework that's trying to put in a sort of a strategic approach to how, in this case, Wanaka will be and will grow?
I appreciate that there is a desire to hold some land for industrial demand. But as my evidence shows, even if you take out Tusk Rise, demand could be 75% higher than what's being projected by Ms. Hampson, and there still wouldn't be a shortage. And that's without considering other land that might become available over time as well. So to my mind, I understand the desire for a strategic framework, but when looking at this particular piece of land, it's not immediately obvious to me why it's the first best option for heavy industrial type activities when there are alternatives available.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, that's sort of a vein I was trying to explore myself was at what point does economics become just timing? You know, if you look at Auckland, for example, Pukekohe, best use of that land growing potatoes. Not so much anymore. And I think that seems to me, and I'd be interested in your interpretation of this in terms of the difference between you and Ms. Hampson's expert evidence in terms of the economy, is it does come down to that timing. Is that a fair comment, or am I understanding it wrong?
In terms of the different demands for land?
Well, in terms of, I think, from my understanding of Ms. Hampson's evidence, she's looking at this land and saying, look, to the point the Commissioner made, once it's gone, it's gone. So what the Council's trying to do is protect, look at the land and protect it, and you're essentially saying, well, if let's just use it. That's inefficient, let's just use it. So is it just a question of timing, or have I got that wrong?
No, I don't think it's just a question of timing. I think what I'm trying to get across is that protecting it, as you say, for a rainy day when that industrial land demand might come, even though we haven't seen it in any forecasts, and you've heard today there's no evidence of it, that comes at a cost. And it's not necessarily a financial cost, although I'm sure the landowners might disagree. I'm looking at it from an economic cost to society, to community. That's a scarce resource, all resources are scarce. It's a resource which could be used to generate jobs, incomes, well-being for the community. But if it's being held for a rainy day and that rainy day never comes, then that's just a wasted opportunity, to my mind, especially when there are alternative sites available.
Is that what you mean in your evidence when you talk about hampering Wanaka's GDP and economic well-being?
Absolutely.
Because I thought that was, initially when I first read that, I was trying to make the quantum leap from to hampering. Like, I can see there's protecting and saving versus, but how you got to hampering economic well-being, GDP and economic well-being, is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, I should have used the standard economist language of relative to a potential counterfactual where the resources were used elsewhere. So what I'm trying to say is if it's held, protected, and not used, sits idle, that means the Wanaka economy can produce less than it otherwise would do if it was used for something else. So it hampers well-being and jobs and incomes relative to that counterfactual.
I'm with you.
and that would explain also your comment about innovation, and this again seemed to me to be a quantum leap, so I'd appreciate your expansion on it, was innovation and new business development will be stifled if restrictive industrial zoning is maintained. That seems quite, that language seems to me quite strong. I was just wondering what you were, if you could make that jump to stifling an economy.
Again, it's stifled relative to an economy where there are more options to businesses of a wider range of different types to start up or to expand on their existing sites. So again, it's relative to a counterfactual, and I appreciate I could have been clearer in my summary there. So
that's okay, because I was just referencing your, my view is not born of some rabid free market ideology, which it did seem to be.
Well,
economists being economists, I apologise.
I'm not going to buy it on that one.
Well, that's all my questions.
Yeah, thanks. The comparison you've given us is premised on the land still being used to provide jobs, but as you'll have heard, the discussion, the mixed-use zone also provides for it all to go to housing. So if that happens, is it still a better outcome for the economy of Wanaka than keeping it a general industrial zone?
Providing for people's housing when there is a housing shortage, particularly at the lower end of the market, as the council's evidence has shown, I would say providing services for people to live there is better than it sitting idle, absolutely.
We've received a number of submissions across the district for people seeking to change the industrial zone to the mixed-use zone. I appreciate your description of it as a flexible zoning approach, but as I see it, it still has the same framework as the general industrial zone. It just provides for perhaps a slightly broader range of mixes, but it still has activities that it doesn't provide for. Would you agree with that? The mixed-use zone doesn't say you can do whatever you like. It has certain things that you can do and certain things you'd need different categories of consent for, and certain things you probably never get granted. Is that fair?
I'd have to leave that to the planning expert.
Okay. One of the points you make is that it's inefficient to have too much of one type of zone that provides for certain activities when there are other things that could be done.
Yes.
How do we apply your thinking to all the requests to significantly increase the amount of mixed use zone in the district that might result in the equal situation of too much land for the particular range of uses that they provide for?
Yeah, and I appreciate that sentiment coming through. In terms of my evidence, I can only play what's in front of me.
Yeah.
I can't make the judgment across all the various different types. And that's why you guys are paid the big bucks to do what you do.
You might be surprised at that.
From my perspective,
I wouldn't go there if I was you.
I'm glad everyone's awake anyway.
We'll pass around the camp for you to make a contribution to our fiscal well-being.
Chocolate biscuits gratefully received.
Yeah.
So can you give us any suggestions on what we might look for or how we might figure out if there's too much? And then if there is too much, how do we figure out who gets the chop?
Yeah, I mean, that comes down to weighing up the planning, the noise, the acoustics, all the various things. There's no formula that you can use, otherwise these processes would be much shorter and you guys would be replaced with a spreadsheet. But I would say, again, being a filthy free market economist, I would say that prices matter here. Prices are the one thing we have in the economy that will give you an indication of whether or not there is a scarcity of a certain resource. And it doesn't have to be a particular type of land. It can be an energy price, it can be a wage, it can be an interest rate, whatever you like. Prices are what send those signals. If you start seeing the prices of agricultural land going through the roof, that might be a signal for future plan considerations that you might want to find some more of that. Not easy to do. anyway, I think you get my point.
No, I don't. What point were you making with price relative to the specific request here of GIZ or mixed use zone?
My the point is really Ms. Hampson's evidence, which seems to suggest that if prices were going up, that was a bad thing, and we shouldn't have any of it. And I completely disagree with that.
Okay.
So that's the point I'm making.
Okay, I followed that thinking. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Dawson.
Ms. Hampson's evidence, as I recall it, said that the industrial part of the economy, and when she's talking about industrial, she's not talking about heavy industrial and manufacturing, which you've referred to. She's talking about industrial as it applies to this district, and I think it's really light industrial and servicing is what they clump into this general industrial zone. And she's saying it's the fastest growing part of the economy. Now, that'll only be in a percentage terms, and it'll be off a lowish base. But she does emphasise the community benefits of having industrial service, light industrial service land available in close proximity to towns, to where people live, to other services, and that that's she calls that a socially efficient outcome. So do you disagree with that?
As I said in my summary here, you could replace industrial and service activities in that sentence.
So you don't disagree. You say, yes, that applies to everything.
There are benefits from having things close to you.
Including industrial and service.
I personally would rather be closer to retail and commercial than even light industrial. But that's just me.
In relation to being in close to a town, in other words. Not having them all way out in the countryside. That's really, you know, do we want all our industrial areas way out in the countryside, or do we want them attached to our towns? Are there some benefits of having them attached to our towns?
Well, there are, but there are also costs as well.
Isn't the MPS saying that it is important to have your business areas close to your towns? Doesn't the plan say that's important too, this plan?
Yeah, I'm not saying there aren't benefits from having industrial and service activities close to a town, but I'm saying there are also similar benefits,
yes,
potentially more, from having other types of business activities close to
town. So if you look at
town,
this area here, and as far as I can see, you've really concentrated on the Tussock Rise site, which is actually just the vacant site there, rather than even the area surrounding it, which they've covered in their submission. But couldn't you apply your same argument to all of that purple land? In this district, land is highly valuable for all sorts of uses, unless it's miles away from anywhere. Even if it's just across the river, you're into rural residential land or in the surrounding rural area, which could possibly outcompete industrial. So at what point does the council say we need some industrial land close to town, even if there are other uses that might outcompete it if it was just left to the open market to decide?
I would say when there's evidence of demand for it.
Well, that's what Ms. Hampson believes she's provided us with in terms of the levels of industrial and service uptake and the need to provide out for the next 50, for the plan to be required to provide for the next 10 to 15 years. So the plan's got to be forward-looking for quite a long time.
Oh, I understand.
And you're talking about demand right now.
No, I'm not. Ms. Hampson's evidence,
how do you know what the market's going to be saying over the next 15 years?
Well, how does Ms. Hampson? It's the same thing. You can't actually project all of these things going out that far. So her evidence suggests there will be a surplus over the period to 2048. So not just right now.
Yeah, for Wanaka. I'm not arguing that. But how do we even provide for that if everybody that says they've got GIS says, no, we want another zone?
Well, that comes back, I think, to my answer to the previous question, which is that you're going to have to consider that across the range of things that the experts are talking about today. But
is there anything that distinguishes the site you've looked at from others in the area in terms of the arguments that you've given us?
In terms of why it should be protected,
or
why it shouldn't be?
One or the other.
Well, to my mind, it's already got a lot of commercial and retail type activities.
Well, it's vacant, isn't it? The site you're looking
around it.
Yeah.
Around the site, it's pretty close to town. We can argue. One can argue whether or not it's nicer to be closer to retail and commercial, or industrial type activities. As I say, I know what I would prefer. To my mind, this is pretty close to the town centre now. That would seem to me to make it a pretty good location for business mixed use type activities rather than light industrial type activities.
I suppose what I'm saying is, I mean, given that that's a relatively small area of purple up there, is there anything that distinguishes the Tussock Rise site as opposed to any of the rest of that purple area up there? I mean, they're all quite close to town. I mean, they're all on the edge of town. Of the town, not town centre, the town.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know the rest of the site so well, so
all
I can't
right.
I can't provide an answer to that, sorry.
That's all, thank you.
Commissioner Smith.
Thank you. I'll try and be brief and then we're kicking on. I'm just conscious that, interested in that discussion around price and demand. I mean, it can have the opposite effect, though, as well. And I'm thinking of the Anderson Heights business area, which effectively was the precursor to this, in a way. Mm. When I've lived in Wanaka 17 years and those lots up there were subject to an incredible price increase in the early 2000s that saw many of them undeveloped for, more than a decade because of the economics. They were no longer viable to build something on and get a suitable return based on the rents. So, I suppose I'm just interested in that, is that there is an inverse, that if the price goes beyond it, it cannot provide the need and it can't actually fill the gap that it's supposed to.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. There's a difference between zoning something and it immediately becoming available for use. Yeah, I take that point.
That's fine. I'll leave it there. The rest would be a flight of fancy, probably.
Thank you. Mr. Bellinger.
Thank you. Mr. Devlin.
Mr. Devlin.
Good afternoon. I have to give a summary of my however, I haven't, in that summary, specifically gone through Mr. Place's rebuttal. It is just a summary of my evidence, but I'm happy to take evidence, take questions on that rebuttal evidence if you have any. Would you like me to read that statement?
Over to you. I'm looking at the time. It's 5:05.
It hasn't been read. It's been...
No.
Sorry. Oh, you mean the supplementary statement?
No, my summary of evidence.
The summary of evidence.
Yes, well, I think perhaps we'd just, let's just do it. And as my colleague would say, crack on.
In my primary brief of evidence, I support the submission of Tussock Rise Limited, Bright Sky Land Limited, and Alpine Estate Limited, together Tussock Rise, that the Tussock Rise site and other adjoining land nearby should be zoned business mixed use rather than the notified general industrial zone. In section one of my evidence, I set out in detail how the strategic location of what I have called the Wanaka Industrial Area means that it is not well suited to a more pure industrial zone, which will strongly regulate the existing mixed-use nature of the area and will seek to limit it to predominantly industrial and service activities. Based on the ground truthing undertaken by Kia Ora DC and the ground truthing of sites adjoining Tussock Rise undertaken by Mr. Miller, the area is already mixed in nature, and a number of existing activities will fall into the prohibited category should the notified provisions be adopted. While existing use rights would most likely apply, These are fragile and existing consents may not include consent for the activity itself. In my opinion, the purpose statement of the business mixed use zone, which seeks to provide for a complementary range of commercial, business, retail and residential uses, better encapsulates the area than the purpose statement for the general industrial zone, which seeks to provide for the establishment, operation and long-term viability of industrial and service activities. It is accepted in the evidence of Mr. Ballingall for Tussock Rise and Ms. Hampson for QLDC that Wanaka has a good supply of industrial land. The loss of the Tussock Rise site, which is the largest vacant site in the wider area requested to be rezoned to BMU, will not have a significant impact on industrial land supply for Wanaka. Positively, it will increase competition in land markets as under the district plan, under the proposed district plan at present, the only significant vacant BMUZ zoned land is at three parks in a single ownership, recognising that the Anderson Heights BMUZ is largely developed. With regard to transport matters, the roading network in the vicinity of the Tussock Rise site is incomplete. Avalon Station Drive, Gordon Road, Frederick Street, Connell Terrace, Enterprise Drive and Doug Ledgerwood Drive are all constructed to form through routes but are currently all no exit roads pending the development of the Tussock Rise and Bright Sky land. I should also note there that the Gordon Road extension is also partly on the Gordon's land. Through my work with Mr. Carr on the adjoining Bright Sky Special Housing Area proposal, I am aware of the issues and options for roading in the wider vicinity, many of which are not within the control of the submitter. However, the Tussock Rise site can be fully accessed through the Bright Sky land. The two companies share two common directors, if necessary. Future development of the Tussock Rise site would require a careful design-led approach to ensure a good outcome, and the business mixed use zone objectives and policies and the proposed design guidelines would assist in this regard. Reverse sensitivity is a risk, and the BMUZ has protections built into it that will help ensure a mixed use environment where a range of activities can coexist. Dr. Trevathan canvasses the acoustic matters in his evidence. The BMUZ has been applied to other areas such as Gorge Road in Queenstown and Anderson Heights and Wanaka that also have a mix of land uses, including some industrial and service activities. In his Section 42A report, Mr. Nicholas Roberts has accepted the Tussock Rise relief in part in relation to the three parks area, the business subzone, that was also proposed to be zoned general industrial. A new three parks business zone is proposed, which recognises the GIZ was unsuitable for that business area. For similar reasons, the GIZ on the other side of Ballantyne Road and on the Tussock Rise site should also be recognised as unsuitable for general industrial zoning as notified. In summary, my concern is that the council, when deciding not to zone for new vacant greenfield industrial sites in areas where the GIZ would be suitable, has instead sought to rigidly protect the existing developed industrial areas that are already developed in such a way that they are not suitable for the proposed GIZ framework. The proposed rezoning adopts a pragmatic approach that recognises the strategic context of the Wanaka industrial area and surrounding land uses that are almost all residential in nature, recognises the receiving environment of the Wanaka industrial area is split roughly 50-50 between predominantly light industrial and non-industrial activities, and on the Tussock Rise boundary, the split is approximately 58-42 based on the research of Mr. Miller. Recognises that Wanaka is well supplied with industrially zoned land, yet recognises QLDC's desire for this form of zoning and retains the GIZ in suitable areas. Provides for new business mixed use zoning, including some vacant supply and different ownerships. Provides a more enabling planning framework for a post-COVID-19 Wanaka economy with a reduced tourism industry. Includes provisions to ensure large format retail does not establish and compete with the Wanaka or Three Parks commercial centres, and will not result in a large number of existing activities falling into the prohibited category.
Mr. Devlin, you've given us supplementary brief on the NPS. Tell us about that.
Yes, so it's hot off the press, the new NPS UD, and I note in paragraph 3 I tripped into the old, called it the UDC, but it is just now National Policy Seminar on Urban Development, and my first question was whether Wanaka's got 10,000 people. And according to the 2018 census, it nearly does. But that was 2 years ago, and it was only 448 short, and so there would have been growth in that 2 years since. Plus, it uses the term intended to be part of a housing and labour market of at least 10,000 people, and I think if you take the approach that the zoning for residential in particular already provides for more housing, this is an urban environment intended to be part of a housing and labour market of at least 10,000 people.
You could say that if you adopt the approach that Ms Hampson has done and say that whatever else is in part of that labour market, Hawea and Luggett clearly are, it will take you over the top.
Yeah, I struggle a little bit to say Hawea is part of the Wanaka urban environment, but I see the point. Yeah,
in terms
of a labour market. Yeah.
The labour and housing market.
Yeah, true. Yeah. So I then go on to look at some of the key objectives and policies. And in policy one, it goes on to explain what contributes to a well-functioning urban environment. And it lists matters A to F, and I work through those matters. And then Mr. Munro's question about living in these areas is particularly relevant. I think you asked Mr. Todd. To this objective three, and just when that question came up, I looked at objective three again, and it does say district plans enable more people to live in and more businesses and community services to be located in areas of an urban environment in which one or more of the following apply. A, the area is in or near a centre zone or other area with many employment opportunities. So I think the question was, you know, does the MPS actually want people living in business areas? And it seems to, yes. It seems to say that. So. Just moving on to policy five. My understanding is at the moment Wanaka doesn't have a public transport system, but it has. In a 2018 report, there was a study sort of done of potential public transport networks as part of that Wanaka Network Operating Framework report, and I think Ballantyne Road was identified as a likely PT route. So, and yeah, happy to take any questions on that supplementary statement. I guess I wasn't seeing any deal breakers in it in terms of this proposed submission. I've said there it's largely seems consistent with it.
Mr. Devlin, other submitters have pressed on us the fact that the requirement to meet demand plus a margin is now at minimum, as saying, as in, or that to is implying that there is need to do better than that if you can. Mr. Ballinger's argument is, well, if there's enough industrial land, it's a waste. So is there a conflict between the two, like between the economic concept of efficiency, as Mr. Ballingale's presented it to us, and what the NPS is saying, you must do this at minimum, which, as I say, a number of submitters are arguing strenuously means you should do better if you can.
It's a good question. One point I'd note is in relation to its predecessor, the NPS UDC. There was guidance that came out with it, and it had a really useful diagram included with it that showed sort of plan-enabled capacity as a big circle, and then within that there was, zoned and serviced capacity, and then within that there was, actively being developed land, and then within that circle there was another circle which was sections on the market, and I found it really illustrative in terms of you can zone tons of land, but the actual amount that is on the market at any one time is the supply. And I think the message you're receiving of, you know, over zone or, you know, exceed even the NPS requirements reflects that situation that only the price is what's on the market at the moment. Doesn't matter if you've got 30 years supply if it's just sitting there. So I don't think the two concepts are in opposition to one another. I think they more just reflect the fact that zoning doesn't equal supply. And
that's an argument or a line of reasoning that a number of those same submitters have put to us as well, drawing attention to that zoning does not equal supply. And the argument they are running is, therefore, you must zone even more to ensure it actually gets to the market. And it occurs to me that you could apply exactly the same logic to the supply of industrial land, which I would obviously not be where the Tussock Rise team want to be. But the issue is, well, what does this NPS actually mean and what does it require?
Yeah, I think I could write a thesis on that, that topic. Yeah, it's a tough one. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's literally a couple of weeks old, so I think I can't really answer that.
To say we draw you the short straw is the understatement of the year.
Yeah.
We're arriving in the middle of our hearing.
Yes.
So a ritual bow in the direction of the Wellington team. Thanks heaps.
Yeah.
Is just one of life's conundrums that we'll have to wrestle with.
Yes.
We had probably just one. I mean, I think the issues have been pretty well covered, but going through a supplementary statement most, and I think the comment you just made, not a deal breaker here, but you've clearly looked at the National Policy Statement, Urban Development, in relation to your client's site. And I look at the map that we've got up there, and I look at what Mr. Place is recommending, essentially to that, I'll call it the south or southwestern side of Ballantyne as GIS. Mr. Roberts on the other side is recommending taking away some of the GIZ and putting in effectively business mixed use or the other more specific zone. And if you applied the National Policy Statement, Urban Development Policies, to that broader perspective, you could have come up with an equally, or the question to you is, could you have come up with an equally supportive position on the National Policy Statement that the outcome or the recommendations of the officers would equally support a well-functioning environment because it provides for all of those sorts of activities, and it's saying it's consolidating the more business mixed use on that side of the road as part of three parks. On the other side, it's still providing for business in a more consolidated sense.
I don't think the NPS UD gives as much support to a general industrial zoning in this location as a business mixed use zone. And the reason for that is those objectives and policies that we talked about living in and near to commercial centres. And this site just happens to be basically near the intersection of the road leading to the Three Parks Commercial Centre and the Ballantyne Road into the Wanaka Town Centre.
Can I just clarify, because the way that objective three that you wrote it, I thought you had sort of answered the question that enabled more people to live in, and then more businesses and communities to be located in. So the living in the inn doesn't apply. It simply says provide for some business activities and other activities where you can live in. Isn't that contrary to what you just said? Where the commas are placed in that objective are quite important.
In objective three?
Yes, as I read it. So it's to enable more people to live in areas and urban environments and to enable more business and communities in those areas. So So it's not implicating the living in those areas in the business. Or, I mean, the thing is, business is so broadly defined. In the definition, business talks about all those things, industrial, the whole lot. So maybe that's why I don't want to get into too much detail. I suppose what I was really putting to you is you could write how the NPS is given effect to in a whole lot of ways in this context. You're simply saying, I think, that this document, certainly supports your client's case and certainly doesn't take away from it. It's not the panacea. It's not the same one thing as aha.
That's right, yeah. And just coming back to that objective three and the commas, isn't it that both people are to live in and more business and community services are to be located in areas, so it's the same area?
Well, I'm sure the lawyers will have a field day.
I read it differently. I didn't read it as separate areas.
And I did, so right. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, does the end result, if you read it the way you're talking, that the whole town should be B-Muscle?
Yeah, everyone should live in it.
Businesses
should be in every area.
Residences should be in every business area.
I think it is a strong direction for mixed use environments, and the whole planning system is kind of moving more towards mixed uses. You know, the whole separating activities, purely separating them, creates massive traffic and commuting problems.
How do you provide for industrial activities then? Ever?
Yeah, or separating separate land uses is not dead, but there is definitely a movement towards more mixed use environments in the planning system generally.
Mr. Munro.
Thank you, Mr. Edwin. One of the problems or difficulties I have with mixed use zones such as the proposed one here, when I think about the NPS, is that the NPS talks about providing residential land and it talks about providing business land. Now, in the context of a zone like the Wanaka Town Centre Zone, there's a clear vertical delineation such that one can simultaneously claim that land as contributing towards the business component and at the same time residential component, because it's got to be above that first floor, kind of the ground floor. But in the context of the mixed use zone generally, it could become in reality 100% business or 100% residential. And we're stuck grappling with the situation of arbitrarily just guessing some split might be serving the residential, some split might be serving business, some split might do both by having residential above business. Or another approach is to say, perhaps the safer way might be to say those zones that are purely for residential purposes might count towards the NPS goal of residential capacity and supply, and those business zones that only really provide for business might deal with the business demand, and the mixed use zones might sit in that cherry on the top, at least language the NPS uses that could be providing over and above. So how have you dealt with the mixed use zone as accommodating both residential and business, knowing that you can't always have the same land double dipping? If you follow my thinking, because we don't have that rule in the mixed use zone limiting residential to above the ground floor. So do you follow where I'm thinking? As we discussed with your client, it could all become residential, in which case it's not helping to meet the business supply at all.
I was just checking one thing, sorry. I was just checking. There was mention of residential ground floor in the design guidelines. I was just checking if that was, in relation to a rule.
I don't think there's anything.
No. Yes, so you're right, in Wanaka Town Centre you can sort of easily categorise it horizontally. It's more difficult in a mixed-use zone, and I know the economists grapple with that for their models of land supply. What they do is they count that they have to assume all of them being available for that one particular category. So, for example, in the Frankton Flats special zone, Frankton Flats B, it is also a mixed-use zone as well, and so the economists, when they're calculating supply, will go through all those activities that are provided for in that zone and effectively count them multiple times. But then they will put somewhere in their report that, in the Frankton Flats area, there's five sort of permitted activities, and not all of that land is likely to be used for one particular class.
So then they discount them again, don't they?
Well, it's a big qualifier to any assessment.
Yeah,
that's right. And so
What's your advice? Should we be counting the mixed-use zone land towards the residential supply or the business supply,
both,
or do you advocate some split?
Both, yep. And both.
We can't pretend the land will be 100% available.
Both,
in real terms for both, because we know that can't...
That's right. You have to count it towards both, but with an asterisk saying unlikely to be all of this.
Well, economists can give us evidence on that, because they're not the decision makers. We have to satisfy ourselves that there will be sufficient demand to meet at least X residential and X business. So is it your advice that we should just split it in half in area terms and just guess that half might be put towards residential uses and half might be for business or something else?
Well, you can definitely count it towards supply, and I think a split is a reasonable approach, because my understanding of the economic projections is they're usually 50% either side. So I think that's a reasonable approach.
All right, well, it's not helping me. I'm going to move on. So you heard your client very helpfully and frankly describe to us its vision, or their vision. Sorry, chaps, you're both here. I can refer to you as people, not in it. And there was discussion of the Three Parks business zone that might not really provide for residential at all. You've supported the mixed-use zone. You've heard us, at least two of the commissioners, raise doubts about whether, in fact, the mixed-use zone should really be a business zone at all. I agree with comments Commissioner Dawson made earlier that it actually feels more like a residential zone that you can do some business in, rather than vice versa. So in terms of what we discussed with your client, do you equally support some alternative for the land that might be a bit mixed usey in terms of the business outcomes enabled, but not so much the residential side, or do you think we're going at the wrong tree?
Yes, no, I thought that was a good conversation. I looked at interest with the land across the Ballantyne Road there with the Three Parks business zone, and the name put me off a little bit, because clearly not in Three Parks, but that type of zoning with less of a focus on residential may be more suitable. The business mixed-use zone was, I guess, the best available at the time.
Understand all that.
It came out through.
Another alternative, what if we were to think about a method similar to what you see in the Wanaka Town Centre zone, which could be residential, but as long as it's above ground floor, might have the similar net effect.
That would be fine.
Of clearly steering people towards some business use,
yes.
And then it's up to them if they want to throw some resi on top, such as custodial units or worker accommodation or similar that we heard about.
That would be a good approach. And I do note the business mixed use zone does have some bespoke provisions in it. For example, Frankton North's in at Sugar Lane recently. So I think
so that approach to the structure of the plan to flavour it specifically for this area.
Yep.
Yeah. But overall, looking at all of those things that you've heard discussed today, what do you think would be the most appropriate outcome of the lot?
I got the sense the panel had reservations about the enabling nature of residential in the BMUZ.
Forget about us. What do you think? What's your view?
Of the best approach for the
most appropriate approach. Of everything you've heard discussed today, do you still think it's the BEM as put forward, or do you think maybe there's something else?
Yep. So I do still think the business mixed use is appropriate, but understanding the concern about it being more residential than business. So to the west is the, you've got a low density residential zone, and then you've got a general industrial zone, and these interfaces always create planning challenges. I guess at the moment the interface is proposed to be dealt with a rather large building restriction area. My view was that the business mixed use, it's a real design-led zone, and it did provide an opportunity to create a better interface than that. And also with the topography of the site literally flying up from Bright Sky into Tussock Rise, you know, that quite strong building restriction area felt artificial, I guess, and I did strongly feel that a business mixed use with its design-led nature would provide a better interface between that low density and industrial area, established industrial area along Ballantyne Road. So.
Yeah, so what that then says to me is a strip of mixed use zone along the edge and then the Free Parks business zone for the balance, which...
Or GIZ.
Or GIZ even. So you know, I can understand that, but that's an edge treatment. That doesn't tell me the rest of it. So I understand your view about the mixed use zone being perhaps the superior one in your mind for the western edge. Help me then fill in the balance of the land.
Well, I think the whole land could be business mixed use. When you're out there, you would have seen it sort of elevated above the surrounding land uses. And so when you're out there, you don't get the strong sense that, despite appearances on the aerial photography, you don't get the strong sense that you are in a business area. So I do think the business mixed use could work on the whole property.
Okay, look, last question, because I know people want to do other things.
No.
In your evidence, well, one of us doesn't, but I do. In your evidence, you used quite careful language about, I think you used the words to the effect of, you had some concern with the way the council had notified a zone within which up to around 50% of the sites would be non-compliant or prohibited. Your client, much more plain speaking today, just said it's plain as bad planning. Do you stand by your view that you've just got a bit of concern, or would you lean closer to your client's view that there's actually something perhaps seriously wrong to use the approach that your client did with the approach the council's taken on those, at least on those sites that have got existing activities on them?
Yeah, I don't think it's a good outcome for a new zone to chuck potentially 30% into a prohibited category, no. And I do accept they have existing use rights or consents, whatever, but I also know from experience that it just creates administrative difficulties in years to come, showing the continuous operation. You know, you haven't stopped for 12 months, and showing the change in nature, scale, intensity is the same or similar. The similar seems to get missed sometimes, and it tends to be more the same.
So putting that together then, whatever one of the many things that have been discussed between mixed-use zone and Free Parks business zone, wherever we end up, is it your view that we've got to do something rather than at all default to the GIZ?
Yes, I listened to your questioning of the council witness with interest around, do you try and create an objective policy and rule framework for those existing activities, or do you let them rely on existing use rights and consents, that sort of thing? And I do think something needs to be done for them. I don't think putting them into the prohibited category is ideal. Non-complying would be better, because then for those extensions and alterations and additions that Mr. Todd mentioned, at least you've got a consent pathway.
Look, thank you for your time, Mr. Devlin. Appreciate your answer.
Before I hand over to Mr. Dawson, just pick up on one thing. My understanding is that industry is non-complying in the BMARs. So are you exchanging one set of inconsistencies with existing use for another?
Not strictly, because in the business mixed use zone, service activities are permitted, but industrial activities are non-complying except for some which are carved out, and that is warehousing, storage and lock-up facilities and things like that. They're restricted discretionary, I believe. So it's not... it's not quite as straightforward as saying industrial activities will become non-compliant, because a large part of the industrial A zone is service activities, and so they're actually permitted. And then your warehousing, storage and lock-up facilities, including vehicle storage and trade supplies, except as provided for by Rule 16.4.18, are restricted discretionary. So yes, some will become non-compliant, but not the service activities and not the warehousing, storage and lockup facilities, including vehicle storage and trade supplies.
And another issue that I should have asked you earlier, you've developed a set of reasoning based on effectively the BMAR's better addressing the existing use, but that doesn't tell me why BMAR's is the right zone for a vacant site.
Yes, so I did comment on the Tussock Rise site specifically in my evidence, and I just refreshed myself on that before this meeting. I think the business mixed use zone is better for the Tussock Rise site for several reasons. One is that strategic context I described, which is that this area is now really in the middle of Wanaka, particularly when you look at the development enabled at Three Parks and Bright Sky. And I think that the design-led approach to the BMUZ is good for a vacant site. Secondly, those other reasons relate to the existing activities that are already around it. So, yeah, in terms of the fact that it's vacant, the BMAS gives it the best approach for a good development.
Point I put to Mr. Todd, and he said that he didn't agree. That equally, you could suggest that because it's vacant, it's much more valuable for industrial use too, or being strategically earmarked for industrial use.
Yes, I guess in my mind, there's a subtle difference between a greenfield industrial site and a vacant site, and I put this in the vacant category, and I guess it comes back to that strategic context I described, which is that right around this area is predominantly residential zoning.
Is it,
yes, it is. So
if you actually look on all three sides of that site, it's industrial.
I'm talking here about
I get you.
What I've called in my evidence the Wanaka industrial area, which is, if I can get you to turn to page 7 of my evidence. Sorry, on page 6, the one before it, I drew a red line around all the industrial and business zonings and called that the Wanaka industrial area. And then I looked at the land uses around that wider area. So number 1 on my figure 2 is the Bright Sky land, which is zoned low density suburban residential. Number 2 is plan change 46, which is still under the operative plan but is a residential zone that enables a couple of hundred sections. 3 is rural zoned land, but it has sort of got houses on it, as you can just make out in the aerial photography behind you. It's been sort of subdivided down to, sort of 4 or 5 hectare lots. Number 4 is a rural residential, rural lifestyle zone, sorry. Number 5 is Three Parks residential, it's actually low density suburban residential. Number 6 is medium density residential. 7 is the proposed business mixed use, which enables residential. 8 is also low density suburban residential, and 9 and 10 were the this new school and the recreation centre. So I guess looking at the wider area, this what I've called the Wanaka industrial area is largely surrounded by residential.
Sorry, I diverted from you, Mr. Dawson. Over to you.
Well, I suppose that's what we're struggling, and that when... we'll go back a bit. What land is, A, your client's submission, and B, your evidence recommending or requesting on the one hand and recommending on the other, be zoned BMUZ?
Yeah, so it says per Appendix A.
Of what?
my evidence in chief, yeah, and that's straight from the submission.
From
so
the submission.
Yes.
So it's the red coloured land.
Correct.
Which included some of the land over the road, which has been dealt with differently by a different.
Correct. Yes.
42A report. Okay.
Yeah.
So, but we also have submissions asking for more business mixed use zone. So when you take us through your argument regarding the whole of the Wanaka industrial area being surrounded by residential or rural lifestyle or close to it, does that not lead you to the argument that all of that would be more appropriate being BMUS rather than general industrial? So how
all
do you
of it?
Do you distinguish your red area from the rest of the purple area?
Yeah, so the purple area directly south of the red area, that's that area that's recently been subdivided by Orchard Road Holdings or Willow
which
Ridge.
Which you've just said has got the PC 46 land to one side of it and
some small lots
to the south
of
it.
So with that, it has literally just had titles issued in the last 6 months, and so my view on that one was that, you know, it's been developed as an industrial area. People go in eyes wide open to the restrictive nature of that zone, and so we also recognised the council's desire for, you know, general industrial zoning, so we left that as general industrial. And with the purple area across Ballantyne Road,
I don't think actually anyone's wanting that to go to BMAS.
No, but I guess the difference from what was notified is that we've said that you possibly don't need that much open space and recreation, and that zone there was the Ballantyne Road mixed use zone, which is, the name's a bit misleading, it was an industrial zone, so I guess in my approach I tried to find a solution that sort of worked for everyone and included some general industrial zone.
So if the open space zone is left as all open space, the land to the south of that down to Riverbank Road is zoned GIS.
It's currently resident rural.
Rural, yes, but we've had a request to zone it to purple. And then you say you can distinguish between that Enterprise Drive area and the area at Gordon Road and then up to Frederick Street, vice versa. You can distinguish that based on the eyes wide open, basically. It's more recent, so you should have known what was coming. There is no other GIS zone in Wanaka, is there? Or in Hawea, or there's some requested.
Submissions. Yeah, that's right.
And we know, and there's some requested at Nugget as well, but
that's right. Yep.
But on submissions, but otherwise this is it, isn't it?
Yes.
And how does that stack up against what's needed in the next 10 to 15 years?
So both economists are absolutely satisfied that there's enough industrial land supply in Wanaka to 2048.
Yes, but I'm just saying, if you take out all of your red zone, red area, and don't add in any of the open space, but do add in the rural land to the south of it, and keep the Enterprise Drive, does that stack up with what they say is sufficient?
Yes, it reduces the supply, but it's still...
But it's still within what they say is sufficient,
even
out to the furthest time frame.
2048.
Is it? Or is
I
it
believe
come
so.
Back
I'd
to the median?
I have to check Mr. Ballingall's evidence and on that.
The building capacity assessment, BCA.
I wonder whether we should ask Mr. Devlin to do that. And to basically to give us a balance sheet of areas about what is the area of each that we can then compare with the economist demand predictions.
Well, particularly with the business capacity assessment, which is the official document that's been done.
So if I can...
You don't need to find it now.
I've got it, if you want it.
if you can put your hand right on it, then that's good, then do it.
Actually, this is actually focused on the loss of the Tussock Rise site, because that's the vacant land which is counted in terms of your supply. So, when you say the Tussock Rise site,
do you mean all that red area, or do you just mean the Tussock Rise site? Because that's what I find confusing.
If you're talking about loss of industrial land, it's the loss of the vacant land that's critical, and so Tussock Rise is the vacant land in that wider area. So in Mr. Bellingall's evidence, he's focused on the loss of that Tussock Rise land, because there's not much else there that's vacant. So his first page three, figure one, shows that the difference shows supply after Tussock Rise is rezoned. So
is he basing it on the business capacity?
Yes. So he took the capacity that Ms. Hampson assessed and then subtracted Tussock Rise from that.
How does that relate to the open space and recreation? Is that included in or discussed in that?
Ms. Hampson factored that into her calculations, because it was notified as being rezoned from industrial to open space.
I wonder where, I'm still unclear. I would appreciate you doing like a balance sheet.
Mm.
How much area is it? Like, how many hectares are in each area? So we start pulling them back in and out of each category, where they are in relation, like this kind of exercise, because this doesn't have the potential changes over the road. So this is only part of the equation of the balance sheet, so to speak.
Yeah. Do you want it focused though on vacant supply today, or on just land in total? Because in terms of
Based it on whatever the business capacity assessment has based it on. I mean, it needs to line up with that document. I mean, that's the official document that we have.
Mr. Bellingall did do that at paragraph 7 of his summary evidence today. He's stated exactly what the figures are against that document that you were talking about, the BDCA 20.
Well, it would still be good to have it in a way assessment.
Like,
he told us that he only looked at the Tussock Rise site. He said that several times.
Yes, that's the vacant site.
If an industrial bit of land's developed, it's not available as supply. It's already in use, so the focus has been on.
So there's no vacant land over the road?
In
the all red area?
The area that Mr. Roberts has recommended be rezoned to the three parks commercial.
You're submitting on it. I mean, your evidence. Yep. You've said your evidence covers the whole of that red area.
Just checking which red area. So
the whole of it, which you pointed me to the appendix attached to your evidence. So, and you said that your recommendation and your submission covers the whole of that orangey red area that's
got
business mixed use marked on it.
Yep. Yes, we can look at that. I was just noting the context that the council is now recommending that.
But we've got to add. Yep. We've got to do this cumulative.
Okay.
Consideration.
Can we get that to you?
You better talk to
them. Put your hand on your heart and tell me when. When practicably could you do it? What can you commit to?
Tomorrow.
That's a very good answer. You could have it until Thursday night.
Oh.
I was worried you were going to say the week after next.
Well, no, I think we've got most of it there already. But
I think you have. But we're interested in you pulling it together. So we've got all these balls in the air. We don't have how many hectares are beside each ball.
Yeah, no, I may need to do some measurements.
I mean, your submission, it covers quite a few of these balls when you look at the whole of that really orange land.
Mm.
And you've said that you can draw a distinction between the Enterprise Drive land, and is that solely on the basis that, well, it hasn't been developed long, it's not that, because it's not that you're saying it's too far away from town, or, I mean, you're not distinguishing the Tussock, the area north of Enterprise Drive from the area south of Enterprise Drive as being less appropriate for business mixed use. You're just saying...
No, you're right. It's not, the fact that it was
recently... It's just too bad for them, really.
It was recently released to market as industrial lots, and I think also the owner submitted in support of the GIZ on it, I believe.
But you're not saying that it's less appropriate for BMUZ than the land you've supported. It's just...
No, I am
it's
saying
just too
that.
Bad, really. You get the less efficiently market unwieldy land, and they seem to be selling and building there, so
yeah.
Somehow they seem to have found a market for that
yeah.
land.
Yeah.
Stuff going up all over the place.
I'm not saying it's radically different from other parts, but the fact it was important to me that it had just been developed under that clearly industrial land
That's
umbrella. Right. Maybe future purchasers might be surprised at what they can and can't do on that land, but it's been sold and marketed recently, so yeah, that was the main distinguishing factor.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Mr. Smith.
Thank you. Well, since we're running out of daylight, caffeine and patience, I'll do my best to...
All of the above.
Just to go back to that discussion I had with Mr. Todd earlier on, it seemed to me that there was quite a clear structure in the old district plan. Do you feel like we've tried to sort of shoehorn the planning standards in around something and sort of potentially left a few gaps?
Possibly what's changed is that business zone. Under the operative district plan, it didn't really provide for residential, whereas now it does, and it is more of a mixed use zone, and so there possibly is a gap there for a business type zone that doesn't have the residential in it, and that's what that three parks commercial zone is probably addressing, I guess. So yeah, I think it is a valid discussion.
So I think potentially that the no doubt what we'll see is that as the business mixed use zone, and particularly Anderson Heights and those things that are close to town, will come under pressure for residential development as more valuable land use than other things. So, I think that will have an impact. But having a look at the planning standards, it was evident to me that there are a number of other things that could have fitted in between. there was a light industrial zone, and there's a general industrial, and then there's a heavy industrial, and there's also a business zone, and there's a bunch of town centre type commercial zones as well. There's the business mixed use, which is different to our business mixed use. Potentially, along with the light industrial, may have filled the gap in between.
Yes, and I did comment in my evidence that there were two industrial zones under the operative plan, and moved to one. I've set out in my evidence those planning standard industrial zones, and there are three of them. I would note there's potentially some. In the future, when those standards have to be adopted, there's going to have to be further refinement of the different zones, I think.
And do you think that the need to create another, abandon the standards and create another bespoke zone for three parks in the three parks business zone is sort of evident of trying to fill that gap?
Potentially, yeah. It doesn't need to be called the three parks business zone. It could just be a business zone that you can then pick up and use elsewhere without... questions about why it's called three parks.
And so if you go to figure one, looking at your evidence, figure one was the operative district plan maps, and I'm interesting to look at the industrial A versus the industrial B, and I suppose it focused on the
Gordon Road, Industrial A focused on Gordon Road and the frontage of Ballantyne Road as being, I suppose, the business frontage that might be more enabled under Industrial A. Do you think that's been sufficiently, I suppose, acknowledged and provided for in the new structure?
Probably not, because I do say in my evidence that the general industrial zone does, it is a bit of a one size fits all, and it hasn't reflected the sort of separation there that's occurred to a degree. I would note, I believe Frederick Street was, I think, consented under a subdivision consent, was rural, and then it got rezoned to Industrial B as part of that plan change 34. It is, the history is relevant.
Okay. I suppose if we were to make provisions for the Tussock Rise site, you know, what relevance and even what scope is there to use the mounding and bunding as a separator within the current structure? Or is that, do you think that's sort of lost in time?
The transition's still important. However, I mentioned the, you know, the business mixed use zone has that strong design-led approach, so that would have to be front and centre for a development of the Tussock Rise site, and potentially the panel might think of an additional matter of discretion or an assessment matter or something to deal with that transition if it was of a particular concern.
You've talked about this design-led approach in the business mix use zone. Is it successful, do you think?
There's been some developments under the BMU in Gorge Road in Queensland, I believe, although I think they're still under construction. So it may be too early to tell, I'm not sure. But I guess having looked really hard at those objectives and policies as part of the design guidelines and things, they are pretty stringent. The design guidelines perhaps not as much as we found at the hearing. But yeah, I think that there's a good platform there to come up with a really good development. So,
under the existing mixed use rules or under something else.
Yeah, under the BMUZ, with potentially some bespoke provisions we mentioned to reflect the Tussock Rise site. So, just like at North Frankton Flats and Gorge Road, in Gorge Road you can go up to 20 metres high as a discretionary activity. So, not looking for that here, but I guess the zone has got bespoke provisions in it for the different areas.
Is it the three park special zone is quite an interesting example. If we look at the MPS and look at the desire for integrated development where business, schooling, recreation, a high street environment where there's high density housing close to transport corridors, all the sort of fundamentals of urban design that we've known about for a long time. In many ways, that the three park special zone, really sought to achieve a lot of those things. Do you think there's a risk that we're abandoning some of those outcomes by the proposed district plan?
Are we getting a little philosophical for this time of night, Commissioner?
The three park special zone was enormously complex. It was 120 pages of rules, and it was like a mini district plan all on its own. And so I understand the council's desire to sort of move to a more standardised approach that replicated those different activity areas within three parks. So I don't think you're losing too much, but it was a beast, is the three park special zone. Yeah.
All right, sounds like we're wrapping up, so thank you. That's all.
Yeah, thanks. Look, Mr. Todd, the question I wanted to put to you that came up independently in this last set of questions, just to dot the I. The staff have proposed to create a new zone to deal with GIZ submissions as it relates to the three parts area. Are you satisfied that, at least as it relates to the issues raised? similar GIZ issues. Would we have scope to simply take that three parks business zone and put to us and take out the three parks bit from the name in the way Mr. Devlin suggested and effectively extend it across the district to deal with like issues? Or is there something unique to the GIZ submissions within the
No, I don't think, I'm just thinking, no, I think you would have scope.
Okay, thank you for that.
Just quickly, yeah.
And on that happy note, might call it a day.
Thank
so
you.
Thank you very
Appreciate you sitting late to hear us.
God and your team will adjourn until 9 o'clock tomorrow.